Hello, and welcome to the Comic Book Page Podcast. My name is John Mayo, and I'll be your host. The segment you're about to hear originally ran as part of Comic Timing Episode 31, which was originally released on February 7th, 2007. In it, Ian Levenstein leads a discussion about the pros and cons of Hollywood writers working on comics. Due to some technical and scheduling issues that Ian had, I ended up being both a participant and an audio comment contributor.
Welcome to episode 31 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Join in as a rotating panel of guests and myself, Ian Levenstein, discuss whatever comes to mind time after time here on Comic Timing. It's time for Comic Timing to go Hollywood. John Mayo, Brent Cassina, and Raph Suhu join in as we discuss Hollywood writers and comics. Do they rock, or are they just a burden? Don't let Joss Whedon know you think he's a burden, or he'll club you over the head with a mallet.
Raph, what the hell are you doing?
Hey, Ian. Yeah, I'm just checking out your computer. I like your setup. It's cool.
Now, Comic Timing.
Hey there, folks. My name's Ian Levenstein, and welcome to episode 31 of Comic Timing. Finally underway after a very, very long delay due to audio problems and the works. We finally have this episode going here, and let me introduce the panel here for you. He is back on Comic Timing, and he has himself his own podcast now. No, I'm not talking about Raph. I'm talking about John Mayo.
Hey, how you doing, Ian?
What's going on, John?
Not too much.
Tell us a little bit about the new podcast.
Well, there's not really a whole lot to say. I've done an episode with David D. on 52, the Supernova Reveal. I've got an upcoming episode on spoilers with Sean and Jim from Raging Bullets. It's a complete spoiler-filled podcast. We basically start at the beginning of the previous thing and spoil every title coming out. Yeah, and really, it took us a lot of research, and man, those guys can spoil DC Comics like nobody's business.
but seriously, we
just talk about what spoilers are and stuff, and I figured, of course, they're experts on it, because, well, they spoil things.
Yeah, I'm really interested in that, so no, I'll definitely be listening in on that, but apparently Jim's cell phone yet again went off.
Yeah, I will give out that spoiler for the episode, because, I mean, he's an important guy, and there's no two ways about it. Everybody's trying to get a hold of him, including people he doesn't know. It turns out it was a wrong number. But he took it nonetheless.
Wow.
Because that's the kind of guy Jim is.
He is a sensei. He's very dedicated.
Whatnot.
Well, also joining us today, and by the way, that is the Comic Book Page podcast, just to remind everybody about that. So go to comicbookpage.com to download. We got Raphael Suhu back with us, the Raph himself, and Geeks Unite has started up. So, Raph, tell us a little bit about Geeks Unite before we get into the episode.
Well, guys, Geeks Unite is a podcast designed to unite the geeks of the world in the world of comics, video games, technology, and I don't know what else.
Lots of porn.
Why not?
Yeah.
Pornography.
Amen. Yeah.
I'll get Jimmy.
Well, now all I can think of is Bender.
I'm recording episode one Saturday.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. Cool. Yeah, no, that'll definitely be something I listen into, because I liked your episode zero, actually. Okay, it told us a lot about your previous life in comics and why you decided to do the podcast in the first place. So definitely good stuff.
And kissing everybody's ass.
Amen to that.
Boy, you did an episode zero?
I did two episode zeros. They're on Libsyn right now. If you go to my forum...
I just did one episode zero, and already not only are you stealing my thunder, you're doing one-upmanship on me. I can't take this.
You inspired me, John. You inspired me. You had episode Alpha, episode Omega, and episode Infinity, so I was inspired to do two zeros.
I'm waiting for episode Gamma, actually.
Yeah, I haven't heard that one yet.
It'll get there. But we're also joined by Brent Cassina, who has no podcast, but you can hear him whenever Jim and Sean decide to actually release BK's Bullets on Raging Bullets. And Brent, what's going on?
That's true. Episode 41, Part 2, I have been promised. The next one will be on there. It's 3 weeks old now, but it'll be on, so...
So, obviously, you're talking about All-Star Batman and Robin number 4, right? Or 3, or whichever one came out last, right?
Yeah, 2. We're talking about 2. That's how late it is.
Oh, wow.
You could also be talking about Wildcats if you want to, but again, we've talked about that a long time before, but welcome back, Brent, and good to have you back.
Thank you.
We're going to be talking about Hollywood writers and comics today, and a lot, and I mean a lot of comments on the Comic Timing forums for this, and I want to thank everybody for doing that, as this is really the first time we've gotten this much feedback on a topic, so I guess people must be enjoying it, so I want to thank them on that. Then again, also, there was about a 2.5-week break in between episodes, so that could certainly be a reason, too, but let me actually read off the topic here. At first, David D. was going to join us. He has a really great post, though, that I'm going to read later on in the episode, so we'll go ahead and do that later on. But an influx of Hollywood writers have begun to write comics over the past few years. Today, almost every month we see a new writer making their way towards DC or Marvel to tackle a new endeavor. Is this trend beneficial to the comic book industry, or does it do nothing but present less jobs for the already established comic book creator? What properties do you feel Hollywood creators have achieved on, and which do you feel failed due to lateness, writing, or otherwise? Would you rather Hollywood writers stick to Hollywood created comics such as Army of Darkness or 24? And lastly, will the trade between Hollywood and comic books continue well into the future? And this is definitely a very, very, very in-depth subject. And actually, before we get into the main episode here, we actually have an audio comment from somebody who's on the show now. And I want to play this for you, as John actually sent this in last week when his internet wasn't working. And he actually reached a lot of interesting points here in just a matter of 5 minutes. So I'm going to play this first, and then John can go a little more in-depth into it, and we can discuss what he had to say. So here is John's audio comment for you guys.
Hey, Ian, it's John Mayo. Sorry I couldn't participate in the call when you were scheduling it, but there were some minor technical difficulties. Okay, maybe minor's not quite the right word. But I do have a few thoughts I wanted to toss in on this whole Hollywood writers and comics thing. Writing comics is very similar to writing movies and television, but it's also very different. So, while I think there are a lot of things that Hollywood writers can bring to the table and offer to the comic book reading audience, I think they need to get used to the differences in the format and different techniques and things that can and can't be done in comic books versus, you know, movies and television. So I don't think their first projects out of the gate should be some sort of, you know, high-profile relaunch of, oh, say, maybe The Flash or something like that. They'd be better off doing, you know, more of a mini-series or something to get their feet wet. With Bilson and DeMeo, I think Red Menace is vastly superior to their run on The Flash. Some of that may have been because they'd gotten a little bit more used to the format. Some of it may have also been extraneous things like editorial influence and whatnot. But my concern is that there are a lot of very talented comic book writers that are having a hard time or, you know, getting work these days, or maybe, you know, they're not looking for work. But I find it difficult to believe that Marv Wolfman hasn't been doing anything, you know, much for DC aside from, you know, his current job on Nightwing and the story he did for the Infinite Crisis special edition or whichever, you know, special it was, you know what I mean. And you're going to edit this to make me sound good, aren't you? No, seriously, you're going to edit this to make me sound good, aren't you? But like I was saying about Marv Wolfman, I think that a lot of really experienced and talented writers had gotten pushed to the wayside to make room for either the up-and-coming new talent or the big-name Hollywood talent. And in a few cases, like Joss Whedon, this has really worked out. In other cases, like, oh, Kevin Smith, well, really, the less said about Kevin Smith, the better. It's not that his stuff is bad, so much as it's so damn late. Now, granted, being late is not exclusive to the Hollywood writers. And frankly, I don't blame them. If I had to choose between a high-paying Hollywood job, be it on TV or film, or a comic book project that maybe is more fun or more interesting to me or whatever, but pays infinitely less, I would imagine, I'd probably go for the higher-paying one that pays the bills. I totally understand that. But I'm not sure that the publishers really do. Because if they did, they would take things like the Ultimate Hulk Wolverine miniseries and wait until they had the whole thing scripted out and ready for the artist before they even considered releasing any of the issues. That clearly didn't happen, and it's not something that really had to come out when it did. So I'm a little frustrated with that. But really for me, I think it comes down to, I don't care what the background of the writer is. I don't care if they've written movies, novels, comic books, or nothing. If they're telling a great story, and I'll enjoy the story, that's all that really matters to me. Writers should find the format and the characters in the story that play to their strengths and go with that. I'm not convinced that the publishers should be going after Hollywood writers just because they're big-name people or, quote-unquote, paid their dues. They should be going for somebody who can get them a story that's good, interesting to readers, and out on time. And frankly, if the Hollywood writers really want to tell stories about comic book characters, what I'd rather see them do is tell those stories in film, in TV shows, on cartoons, anything of the sort, to where hopefully we could get a wider audience for the comic books. But unfortunately, most of the times we're seeing comic book-based movies or television shows or cartoons, the creators of those shows and movies take great liberties with the characters. And sometimes, you know, we're starting to see that in the comics themselves. So I think there's always going to be an interplay and interchange of talent between Hollywood and comics. Sometimes to the benefit of both, sometimes to the benefit of neither. So in principle, I don't have anything against the concept of Hollywood writers working on comic books, but I also don't have anything particularly for it either. I just want good creators telling good stories in good comics out on time. So, once again, Ian, sorry about the technical problems and the recording on Skype tonight, but hopefully this makes up for it. And, you know, maybe you can find a little time, Ian, to listen to my podcast. I mean, I've been on yours a number of times, and you've told me they were, you know, the best-received episodes, of course. But I'm sure you tell everybody that, because, I mean, I can't imagine anyone really wants to listen to me ramble on about stuff. But if they do, they should go to www.comicbookpage.com/podcast. They won't be sorry that they did. Okay, maybe they will be. But it sounds better if I say they won't.
That is John Mayo, ladies and gentlemen. It's a shame that he couldn't be with us today, as obviously, you know, I mean, we love it when he's on the show. And a head as big as his heart. So certainly want to mention that. And, John, you know, it's a shame, man. It really is. Hi, John. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing okay. I think it's even more shame that I could be on the show tonight.
Oh, I'm kidding. Thank you. Thank you very much, man. But actually, no, you brought up...
No, it was nothing about the show. It was more my contributions that I'm about to make that will, you know, undoubtedly leave a lasting negative impression on everybody.
Exactly. Exactly. A taste that
you would
just never be able to get out of your mouth. But no, actually, you brought up plenty of great points there, and I want to actually go to the crowd first and have their comments on it before you maybe go a bit more in depth on that. Raf, what do you think about John's statements specifically in that audio comment so far?
Wow, there's a lot to cover. I think the one thing that I liked the most was that John mentioned the fact that there are out-of-work comic book writers out there, like me, who don't get to write anything because these guys are there. Get the hell out, Heimberg. Let me back in, DC. Let me in. No, seriously, I think John made some great points there. I think the overall gist of it was, you know, as long as you're writing good comics and you're telling a good story and it's relatively on time, you're good.
Actually, I really agree with what you just said there, and specifically, that's basically like the gist of what John was saying as well. But I do like the fact that, you know, he brought up the point that you should probably keep off of the main, like, really, really huge titles first. Get your feet wet in the industry first, specifically if you're from Hollywood. You know, just don't jump right into a big title like The Flash or something like that. Let us know that you can do something first. Let yourself know that you can do something first before you tackle a huge character that's already been established in the comic book community for so long.
I think it's more than just getting comfortable with the format. It's more getting comfortable with the format than the characters. Because Bilson DeMeo, they did the Flash series on TV. But writing a television show is very different than a comic book because you do pacing differently. You don't have the commercial breaks, things like that. Well, I think, you know, you could give them a little bit of a, I don't want to say a pass, but a little bit of a leniency or whatever on, you know, getting up to speed on the character of the Flash, even though the one they're writing in the comics is different than the one they did in the TV series. That should not have been their first comic book right out of the gate.
Oh,
that
sure.
That I thought was a huge mistake.
Yeah, well, I mean, and that actually, I mean, that's a good example there, because apparently they're, I haven't read it, but apparently their comic work that's not The Flash so far has actually been pretty good. So, I mean, I can't really speak for myself, but there have been people who have been saying so far that Bilson and DeMeo's most recent stuff has not been too bad, minus The Flash. So it might be a good idea on that. Brent, what's your take on John's original comments there? And I guess you can add on, obviously, what he just said about The Flash and all that, because I know you have very strong comments about that series.
Well, I do hate The Flash, and I'm glad they're off that book. But I would say that maybe I agree with John's, you know, give the Hollywood writers a title to start off on that's not a main character. Mm-hmm. But I also think for maybe more established writers like Joss Whedon, it would be okay for him to take over like X-Men or Batman, because he's obviously, he wrote, you know, 7 seasons of Buffy and, you know, started the Angel series and wrote the Serenity. So I think he's had more experience writing than maybe Bilson and DeMeo had. I mean, the only thing that I know that they did was the Flash series. I don't know if they've been working regularly in television or writing since then.
That's true, actually. Yeah, I mean, do anybody know off the top of their heads what other work Bilson and DeMeo had done?
I thought they did a couple of the shows, like maybe Mantis or Viper or a couple other syndicated quasi-superheroish shows. I could be wrong on that, but somebody, I mean, Joss Whedon, I think, is a bad example to bring up in this, because he's such a brilliant writer. You know, he could be tossed into any format with almost any material and probably turn out something fairly good. Mm-hmm. But also, you got to keep in mind that X-Men was not his first comic book work. His first comic book work, I believe, was Frey, although he might have done one or two things prior to that. Frey was plagued with lateness, was not necessarily brilliantly received, although it was not panned either. There is a learning curve, no matter how experienced and how talented the writer is, just to get comfortable with the format. I mean, if you're going to go for who's done the most writing, I think possibly Straczynski may have done even more than Joss Whedon, because Straczynski wrote just on Babylon 5 90-hour-long episodes. I'm not sure how many episodes of Angel and Buffy and Firefly that Joss Whedon actually wrote himself. Mm-hmm. It could be that much. It could be less. Okay. I don't know.
Yeah, Raph, you found something about Bilson and DeMeo?
Yeah, I looked them up on IMDb, and most of their credits are actually video game credits. On Bilson's resume here, he has GoldenEye, Rogue Agent, Medal of Honor, Rising Sun, James Bond, Nightfire, Transfer 6, Pulse Pounders, 007 Agent Under Fire, The Sentinel, Viper, The Rocketeer, Screenplay, The Flash, and some other stuff I've never seen. And the same with, actually the same with DeMeo. They basically work on everything together, I guess.
Instead of just a writing team, sort of like what we have these days in comics with certain writers.
Yeah, and they don't do, they've done actually mostly video games, not TV.
Huh, okay. That's interesting.
Well, that would explain things, because I've played Nightfire, and that story was not that great.
Oh!
Ooh.
What was Nightfire about? I don't even remember that.
It was the Bond games before they actually started redoing the movies.
Ah.
It was
with
like
Pierce
the
Brosnan.
It was the first Bond game you have, like, Pierce Brosnan's voice, and they created their own story.
Okay.
Like first one of those. It was like a GameCube PS2 game.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I guess they really like Bond.
James
but the
Bond.
The other TV shows they did were The Sentinel and Viper.
Okay.
Both of which were quasi-superheroish in nature.
Yeah. Viper was,
It was about the car. It was essentially a Knight Rider show.
Pretty much. That's what I remember about that. And I guess it had its merits, you could say, but it did kind of feel like it was trying to be like a Knight Rider for a new generation, and I'm not quite sure why we would need a Knight Rider for a new generation. So I can't really say much about that show, but I guess that does sort of lean towards, you know, moving over to comic books, because a lot of people would say that actually writing for video games is one step away from comic books. So I guess that makes a little more sense for them, but not really too good so far for The Flash. So I mean, does anybody that's on the call right now actually like their Flash arc in any way, shape, or form?
No.
The problem I have is it shouldn't have been Bart. Mm-hmm. They took Bart in the span of 3 years from Impulse through Kid Flash to Flash. Mm-hmm. And they were just, you know, forcing that progression on the character too quickly. So while there were some definite problems in the storytelling and the pacing for the Flash series, there were also just some presumably editorial mandates that were not beneficial either.
Okay. Do you feel like they wanted to write for Wally and they were sort of stuck with Bart?
That's actually what I heard, actually.
Well, I think that's what they were saying in their defense. You know, our arc would be better if it was Wally, but I don't think that has anything to do with the quality of their arc.
I think a good story could have been done with Bart. I just think it was harder than had it been either Wally or Jay or Barry, John Fox, or half a dozen of the other characters they could have pulled.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So.
Yeah, if you were a 16-year-old and then you were prematurely aged, you would still be the same 16-year-old you were. And I know they said, like, he spent an actual 4 years in the Speed Force, but he had no other contacts with anybody to help him mature.
That time, though, is actually most of his aging.
Yeah.
Because originally he went from, like, infant to teenager or whatever in the span of about 2 years living in a VR reality.
Exactly, yeah. So I guess, like, his personality, when you think about it, probably should be around, like, 14 or 15 right now.
Well, also, how long did Wally get to be Kid Flash, and how long did Bart get to be Kid Flash?
Wally was Kid Flash a lot more.
Yeah, for decades, at least two. I'm thinking, I could be wrong. See, Wally was Kid Flash at least through the 60s and 70s, halfway through the 80s, because it was around 86 when he became Flash. And in the span of, like I said, 3 years in the Teen Titans series, Bart went from Impulse to being Kid Flash around issue, I think, 5 or 6, mm-hmm. to being Flash and, you know, within, like I said, about 3 years max.
Yeah, I mean, you only get 4 years as Kid Flash, which I guess translates to about maybe, I don't know, if you're lucky, 2 years in comic book time?
Or less.
Or less, yeah, I mean, come on. Spider-Man's, what, supposed to be like 26 now or something like that? 25, maybe? And he started off when he was 16 years old, and he's been around since the 60s, so.
I'd put him close to 29 or 28.
Yeah.
Okay. He doesn't act like he's 26 at all.
Mm-hmm.
They don't draw him that way. I would put him closer to 30.
All right, so you're giving him about 14. Yeah, okay, so he's aged 14 years in about 30-some-odd years.
Yeah.
All right, that works. Actually, 40 years now that I think about it. Close to that, at least. Because, Spider-Man's been around at least 40 years now. You mentioned J. Michael Straczynski before, and obviously he's had a lot more time to develop a comic book style than Bilson and DeMeo have, and he was on Spider-Man for a very, very long time now, so I guess you can say, like, he's had enough time to adapt himself to the world of comic books. But then again, it was an easy transition between Babylon 5 and the comic book world, because that was sort of comic book in the first place, so you can sort of understand his transition. But
what do you mean by that?
Well, from what I've seen of Babylon 5, and again, it's not much, so this is only my take on a couple of them. They had story arcs that I would say are sort of significant to the process of comic books. Like, they would have very long arcing story arcs like you find today in comic books. And actually, a lot of the stuff that JMS has done have had that same sort of long arcing story arcs sort of feel that transferred, in my take, pretty well over to comics. I haven't liked all of his stories, but I've liked enough of them. So that's sort of what I take from that. I don't know what you guys say, whether you guys agree with that or not, but whether or not his Babylon 5 stuff was comic book enough to sort of transition him over to comic books.
I would equate his stuff on Babylon 5 to more of a approach like writing a novel,
mm-hmm.
writing comic books for the trade, which seems to be kind of what you're implying.
Okay.
I'm not saying you're wrong or whatever, I just hadn't thought about it in those terms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, he does write pretty much in about 6 or 7 issue arcs, and has in the first place. And I don't know whether or not it's intentionally writing for the trade, but it kind of is what he's done ever since he's really started. I mean, his first arc was about 6 or 7 issues. He had a 12-issue arc there, if I remember correctly, at one point. And, you know, he really hasn't changed too much, specifically even with his Supreme Power stuff. That's all been about 6 or 7 issue arcs right there. So he's a very long-winded writer. You're not going to get too many throwaway issues with him.
In Amazing Spider-Man, he did have, like, 2 or 3 issues here and there other than the, you know, the World Trade Center issue that were, you know, standalone issues, or they weren't really tied into anything bigger. So you can't really say he does write for the trade continually like, say, Bendis does, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimate Spider-Man's been collected, and it's always 6 issues.
Well, two things, actually. One, Straczynski also goes back to his stuff a lot. Like, how long was it between Morlun's appearances, between his first appearance and the other, and also Ezekiel? And the second thing was, have you guys noticed they've been kind of phasing him out? Like, he's going to be off Amazing in a few months. He's off Fantastic Four. Supreme Power is on hiatus. I mean, are they trying to get rid of him or something?
Well, he's also doing more Babylon 5 stuff. They're doing a series of, I believe, direct-to-DVD features.
Oh, really?
Stuff. The Lost Tales and whatnot that has, I believe, already started production.
They have.
So I think that's eating up more of his time.
Okay.
Well, if you want to be the conspiracy theorist, though, people were saying that he had problems with Civil War, and that there is a rumor out there. I'm not saying whether or not it's actually a true rumor, but there was a rumor out there that he was the one who leaked that information onto the website about what was going to happen in Civil War, specifically related to Fantastic Four. And it seemed like he wasn't too happy about the direction that he was pretty much forced into on Fantastic Four. And now he left Fantastic Four 2 issues early. So, coincidence here, or is it just the fact that things are eating up his time?
It could be both. I mean, if I were writing Amazing Spider-Man for 4 or 7 years or whatever, and they suddenly said, okay, Spider-Man is going to, you know, be on the Iron Man side, and then he's going to switch halfway through because of no apparent reason, I would definitely have a problem with it. Mm-hmm. As the writer, I'd probably want to say, you know, unless there's a genuine reason other than your storytelling point, like a character reason, then I would say let him stay on one side and let him deal with that. I would have rather seen Spider-Man stay on Iron Man's side or stay on Cap's side from the beginning than the flip-flop that we all knew he was going to do. I think that would have been more surprising to the readers.
Well, I think also, though, Civil War's had such an impact on the Fantastic Four characters.
Yeah.
I think a few of them have been acting out of character, and I could see where, as the writer of that book, he might not have agreed with that. Now, maybe he did. I don't know. But I could at least see where he potentially could have had problems with the direction a lot of the main characters were going in.
Well, I do have to say it took somebody other than J. Michael Straczynski to make me care about Reed Richards, and specifically the first issue that Dwayne McDuffie has written so far gives a very good reason for why Reed is doing anything that he's been doing so far in Civil War. And the two reasons, and two reasons that were given by Reed while JMS was writing the book didn't really do that for me at all. I mean, first it was, if I remember correctly, one of them was a uncle that was ostracized for being a communist or something like that.
Yeah, that
something
didn't fly like with me.
Yeah.
I thought that was stupid.
What was the other one? I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. I know that there were definitely two of them, but I can't remember.
The other one ran along the lines of what McDuffie did, that he saw the future and with mathematical formulas, but I think McDuffie actually explained what was going on with that better than Straczynski ever tried to do.
Okay. But, you know,
but
it,
I could
actually,
be wrong.
It leads me to wonder whether or not he would have actually explained that, or whether or not it just is Dwayne McDuffie actually picking up on his cues. Difficult to really get into that. But also, at the same time, McDuffie is a Hollywood writer also, but he was a, you know, comic book writer first, correct?
I believe so, yeah.
Okay.
On Milestone, I think.
He did Milestone stuff. He's done, trying to think what else, quite a bit. And then I think because of that, he got some opportunities to submit a story to Justice League and then later became story editor or whatever, which was a great opportunity for him and one that he really ran with.
Oh, sure, definitely, yeah. He's had an illustrious career.
Yeah, well, I put McDuffie down as one of the really underrated writers out there. I think he does some really good stuff and doesn't get anywhere near enough credit for it.
I agree.
He created Static Shock.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, without him, we would have never even had the character, so, yeah. And, I mean, that character's gone to many different places over the years. And specifically, I really enjoyed the animated series back in the day. Actually, one of my favorite appearances of the Justice League was actually in that Static Shock crossover. So, I definitely...
That was a fun crossover.
It was pretty good. I enjoyed it.
Definitely, yeah.
With Static Shock and the Justice League, yeah.
We got to talk a little bit about lateness here, obviously, because that's one of the major parts about Hollywood writers that people have a problem with. Specifically, the fact that these writers tend to pick up a project and then go off and do different things and seem to lose track of time. Now, they have to focus upon the project that they're going to be doing, or else you're going to get things like Kevin Smith going off to do some more movies and you never really hear anything about, you know, his stuff until 4 or 5 years down the line. And that is a very difficult thing to actually, you know, allow to occur. Because, I mean, I myself I barely even remember what the hell happened in Black Cat and Spider-Man Black Cat when I picked up the issue. I admit, I picked it up because I wanted to see whether or not he was going to be able to actually pull off having an issue come out 2 or 3 years later than the last one did. But Daredevil Bullseye, I'm dead on. I'm sure it's never even going to come out. There are a lot, and I mean a lot, of Hollywood creators out there that are putting their books out late. Now, is it worth the wait in any way, shape, or form for any of these creators, even if the work is good in the first place? And I'll ask Raph this first.
It really depends. You know, depends on the delay. Like, Alan Heinberg has been really, really delayed, whereas you have others. I can't really think of anyone off the top of my head. You know, they may be a month off. If I'm really enjoying the story, if it's such a good story that it's one of the best, even though it's like 5 months late, then yeah, I'll accept the delays. If it's Wonder Woman has been okay, it hasn't been spectacular, so the delays don't really bother me as much. But like on a really huge book, I would really mind it. Like a Civil War, but that's not a Hollywood book. But you get my point. I think that in some cases it's worth it. Sometimes it's not. Ultimate Hulk versus Wolverine. That's actually the big one I don't like. It's been how long? It's been over a year since number one came out, and I think we got number two, and that's it. And also, I mean, it's so late that Marvel decided to spoof in Wolverine number 50.
Just to remind people that it still existed. Yeah.
Oh, please. Yeah.
Yeah.
To me, these projects should not even be solicited until you have at least 3 or 4 issues in the can. Specifically, if it's going to be a miniseries, you got to have at least 3 or 4 issues out there. Because when these things are solicited, I know that they do that to like garner up the hype, but then when you don't actually get the issues for, you know, months, sometimes even years afterwards, you're just left waiting in the lurch. When the hell is this going to happen? And sometimes, again, it has turned out okay, but to even solicit these things when you know they're going to be late in the first place is just a really, really stupid idea to me. And I don't know whether you guys agree with that, whether or not they should actually wait on that. John, I mean, what do you think? I mean, should they wait until they have a couple in the can first?
Well, certainly for something like Ultimate Hulk versus Wolverine, or Ultimate Wolverine versus Hulk, it's been so long I can't remember the order. there was nothing that really mandated that series start when it did. So, yeah, they should have had that whole thing in the can as far as the scripts went, and a couple done in terms of art before they released any of it. There's no reason that we should be, you know, 11 months down the line since issue 2 came out, and well over a year since the first one came out, wondering if the series is ever going to continue. And that's unprofessional. And certainly the writer carries some of the blame for that, but so do the publishers and the editors. You know, they're acting irresponsibly on this. And, I mean, I remember back when I was first reading comics and stuff, it was the big deal if, like, the Legion of Superheroes shipped a week or two late. Now, if something ships a week or two late, nobody even notices. Because it's reasonably on time. But, you know, to me, lateness and Hollywood writers, while there's definite overlap, I certainly don't see them as synonymous. There are a number of Hollywood writers, Joss Whedon is a good example, that If he doesn't feel he can get stuff out monthly, fine. Astonishing X-Men will go bi-monthly. It'll be set up for what he can do. Straczynski, while I may not like all of his comic book work, by and large, it comes out on time.
That's the one thing you could say about Bilson and DeMeo stuff, too. I mean, even if it hasn't been, you know, that good on Flash, it's still come out on time, so.
Yeah.
And actually, it's kind of interesting. We are fans of one of the few industries out there where lateness is almost expected, and yet we still collect this stuff. I mean, think about it. In a lot of societies out there, in a lot of different, let's say, for instance, you worked at a paper shipping company, okay, and you got the paper out late every single month. They would just, you know, forget about it entirely. They'd go to somebody entirely different. In the comic book industry, you don't really have that, because if a Marvel comic ends up late, you're not going to shun Marvel Comics as a whole. You might stop picking up that particular issue, but sometimes people don't even do that. They stay on a title. And it boggles my mind that that is even the case in comic books, that we accept lateness so willingly sometimes. When it's,
well, it's not like there's a lot we can do about it.
Not pick it up.
But they're still going to solicit it, and they're going to finish whatever they have. I think these days, not picking a book up does less and less than it used to.
Yeah, but is that a good thing?
And if I've already invested, say, using Civil War as a convenient example, in the first, you know, three or four issues, and then it's delayed, I've already invested in nearly half the story. I want to see the return on that investment. Same thing with Ultimate Wolverine and Hulk. Two issues in, I want to see how the thing ends. Should I drop it just because it's egregiously late? I mean, publishers need to be kind of penalized for this. And if there was a way I could penalize them without penalizing myself, too, in some way, I'd probably be all for it.
Well, free copies, obviously.
Yeah. Actually, I was thinking there's another industry that does have a lot of delays, though, the movie industry. If you ever notice Hollywood itself, some movies, you know, they say they'll come out, you know, this summer. It turns out they push back a few months and everything.
Yeah.
And what they do is they have teaser trailers. You know, they do the little teasers. They don't. Sometimes they show the dates and everything. Sometimes they don't. I think DC does this. You know that big teaser image they have for the next big event. You know, they have the image, but they don't have the release date. What they could have done with Ultimate Hulk versus Wolverine was they could have just had the image of the Hulk ripping Wolverine open and say, coming whenever. You don't have to have it. Just because you want to get it out doesn't mean you shouldn't get it done first. And then, you know, do it right and then release it. You know, tease us. I don't mind being teased. As long as it's out, when it's out consistently.
Yeah, V for Vendetta is a perfect example of that. The original trailer had, November 5th, or sometime in November, where it would have tied into the storyline, you know, and they had the whole tagline, remember, remember, the 5th of November, playing throughout every trailer, but then it got pushed back till March because, I don't know, I guess the special effects weren't done or some excuse for it.
There were also the London bombings. You got to remember that.
That too.
Yeah.
But, I think it was pushed back before then, wasn't it?
It was pushed back initially, I think, only a couple of weeks. And then once the bombings happened, it got pushed back until March.
Okay, so that was another reason for it to be late, but I think that's the most recent example of a movie that was promised and then did not deliver when it said initially. But, I mean, the movie studios, you know, they're putting deadlines on movies before they're done, like... You know, Spider-Man 3 is going to be out May 3rd or May 2nd because that's when the studio wants it out. Because, you know, such other movies coming out the week after that. So, you know, they're scheduling these things ahead of time before they're even done.
And that's a kind of a silly way to go about things because you can get piss poor products that way. Specifically, if you have a release date, and again, see, that's like the catch-22 here because... If you strive to get something out for a specific date, that's great because you're going to get it out on time. But just think about what happened with X-Men 3. Had they taken the time to flesh that out, and I didn't mind the movie that much, but think of how much better it would have been had they taken maybe a year to plan it as opposed to like the 4 months that they took. You know, and actually gotten a full thought-out script there, not rushed things that much. Think of how different things would have turned out had that been the case. I mean, sure, the budget was bad on that too, but it would have been probably a bit of a different turnout that way.
But it wasn't just the budget on that movie. They were changing directors a few months before production was supposed to be starting. So I think Brett Ratner walked in there with a script in hand and production designs in hand and said, okay, let's do it, rather than, you know, him create a singular vision for the project.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you talk about X-Men, actually, right away it comes to mind, Bryan Singer. His arc on Ultimate X-Men was initially discussed, 2 years ago now? And because of his Hollywood work, it still hasn't come out. And apparently, it's still in the pipeline. In the process, we got a Brian K. Vaughan arc, and we also got the most recent arc...
Kirkman.
With Kirkman. And it's been great stuff, but it sort of felt like filler because they were expecting this Bryan Singer arc to be out when it was. And these guys wouldn't have even had work to do had it come out on time, or perhaps they would have, but it would have been following that. So, I mean, you're sort of delaying the entire process of the series by not having this arc come out when you initially thought it was going to.
Well, I think part of the problem there is also announcing stuff way too early.
Yeah.
By the time Bryan Singer stuff actually does come out, if it ever does, it's not only going to be old news, it's going to be forgotten old news. And that can't do it any good.
Oh, sure, definitely. I mean, think about it. Do you actually think the average reader remembers that Bryan Singer's even going to be on this right now?
They're going to have a vague recollection of it, thinking it kind of, you know, haven't I heard something about that a couple of years back and it never happened? So, you know, it's going to leave a bad taste in their mouth. Maybe deservedly so, maybe not deservedly so.
Hmm. Yeah.
Well, he was mostly going to be on that to cash in on, you know, him directing X-Men. now that X-Men is going to be over by the time he gets back to it, you know, I'm sure Marvel's going to hype it up like they usually do, you know, just to get more interest in it, but it's not going to be the same as if it had come out after X-Men 2.
Well, you talk about hype machines. You got to talk about Donner's run right now on Superman. And
I which is non-existent now.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I want to definitely turn to Raph on this, and I know that you're such a huge Superman fan. I mean, what have you been thinking so far of Donner's run on the title? I mean, he's taking a lot of stuff that he introduced in the movies and bringing it into the actual comic book continuity. Is this something that you're enjoying, or do you feel like it's possibly something you might not want to see in a comic, but is okay for Hollywood?
I'm actually of two minds on this. The absolute Superman fanboy in me says, this is awesome. Let me put the Superman theme on while I read this. You know, he's revisiting Zod. He's going to do Zod right. He's going to do his version of Superman 3. Great. The other side of the coin is, what about comics? What about moving on to do real comic stories that take place in the current continuity with what we know of Superman and not Richard Donner's version of Superman? He has a great vision of Superman, but it's also 30 years old and it's also being explored in Bryan Singer's series. Do we really need it in both medium?
That's a good question, actually. I mean, what's your take on that, guys? I mean, John, what do you think?
I'm liking what they're doing, but I thought it was a noticeable departure from what they had just set up with the initial 1 year later arc for Superman. So it seems it was poorly timed in that respect. You go to all this trouble to reestablish, okay, you know, Superman's back from being gone for a year, everything's good, and then kind of just take a left turn to go back to a very Christopher Reeve-esque take on the character, which is fun, which is good, which is enjoyable, but different from the Clark Kent Superman that, again, they've just reestablished. You know, maybe they could have done that, you know, as a miniseries or something separate.
All-Star?
Possibly All-Star, yeah.
Even Confidential.
Confidential.
Yeah, even
Confidential would have been a good place for it, yeah.
Brent, I mean, what about you? Have you been enjoying Donner's run so far?
Yeah, I'm with Raph. I'm of two minds, but not because, I mean, I'm a Superman fan, but not to the version that Raph is. But
that's, you know, right.
I'm enjoying it because of the writing, but I do think that it is too much of an ass kiss to himself. Kind of like Superman Returns was an ass kiss directly to, you know, Richard Donner.
Yeah.
I would have rather see him do something else entirely to start off with, rather than his version of Superman Returns or his version of Superman 3. I want to see an original story, not something that's been in his mind for 30-odd years or
sure.
so.
Sure, yeah. And, I mean, that's the arc we're going to be getting soon. We're going to get, basically, his Superman 3. And it's fine, perfectly fine, that this is perhaps, you know, the untold Superman 3 releases a miniseries, but you're releasing this in Action Comics. I don't know if that's what I want to see out of my Action Comics book. And specifically, I don't want to see it late, and that's what we already have.
Yeah, I don't know what the lateness is. If it's, you know, Geoff Johns just stepped off of Teen Titans. I don't know if that's because of his schedule or if it's an art thing or what, but it's getting All-Star Batman late now. It's been 4 months. I mean, they announced a filler issue with Renato Guedes doing art on it, but that's supposed to be like the fourth issue in the arc, and the third hasn't even come out yet.
Did the annual come out like it was supposed to this past week?
No,
it didn't. Next week.
Next week, okay.
They released previews for it on Newsarama saying previews for this week, but it never came out.
Okay, all right.
They pushed it back a week like they did with Civil War.
Gotcha, okay. All right. And Civil War, again, that's pushed back until, February
21st.
Yeah, no, I was talking about number 6. It was supposed to come out December, the end of December. It came out the beginning of January. Mm-hmm.
How about Guggenheim? Guggenheim's been doing a damn good job so far on Wolverine. He's going to be taking over on Flash soon for Bilson and DeMeo. And yet again, another Hollywood guy who's coming into the world of comics. But I really enjoyed his Civil War arc for Wolverine. I felt it's the best Wolverine has been, possibly since that Miller Romita Jr. run. And, I mean, that says a lot, because I loved that run. So, I don't know whether or not you guys are as keen on it as I was, but it felt like Wolverine. You know, it didn't feel like he was writing, say, like a Hugh Jackman Wolverine or anything. It felt like it was in continuity with Civil War. It gave us another side to the story you would not have gotten from the actual Civil War itself. And the art definitely played to that, because Humberto Ramos, sure, he's a bit abstract, but he does a very cinematic style. And you felt that a lot inside of that book. So the art and the writing were definitely positives for that particular arc there. And I can't wait, really, to see what Guggenheim's going to do on Flash. I think he'll do a damn good job.
Yeah, I'm of the same mind. I loved that arc. I may know Red's things on the forum that other people didn't. I think the Uncanny X-Cast had a lot of issues with it, but I really enjoyed it.
John, were you a fan?
I didn't really care for the art, but the story was good.
Okay, so you're not much of a Ramos fan?
I like his stuff, like when he was on Impulse and stuff. I don't like that style on Wolverine. I don't like it fits.
Okay. Do you think that Guggenheim will be able to do a better job on Flash than Bilson and DeMeo have been doing?
I certainly hope so. I mean, the most recent issue of The Flash I enjoyed. I think part of it was they just got off to a rough start on The Flash. By, you know, the third or fourth issue, it had gotten a lot better. Do I think switching the creative team is a good move? Oh, certainly.
It feels like it's the right time, really. You know, I mean, they had their shot on it, and the sales aren't that good from what I've seen. And, I mean, honestly, it feels like it could be a much better book if they tried hard enough. And they feel like they're actually going to be trying here with Guggenheim, because it's a very different voice, that much I can certainly say. Raph, were you following the Wolverine arc at all, the Guggenheim?
Yeah, I actually liked the Wolverine arc a lot. Maybe I wasn't a big fan of the Ramos arc just because I'm an anatomy freak. I really enjoyed it. I especially liked the Christmas special, issue 49. Mm-hmm. That was really good. I'm hoping Guggenheim is as good on the Flash. Spoilers, I think Bilson and DeMeo took Flash to L.A. and made him part of the LAPD, so he's following in his grandfather's footsteps.
Oh, God.
So I hope maybe Guggenheim can kind of like take that and do something with it. And, yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I'm going to get back on the book with issue 9.
Well, he's going to have to write that damn good, because I really don't like the idea of Bart Allen as a policeman.
Yeah, I think that was Bilson and DeMeo trying to, you know, sabotage the fans or something. It just feels, like, totally wrong for the character, and, I mean, it's just ridiculous in my opinion.
Good, you guys, I'm going home.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the fact that he was, you know, an impulsive kid 4 years ago in our world, and, you know, now he's a policeman, I don't know if that really works for me. And, I mean, I liked him as Kid Flash. I did. And I liked him. I admit this. I liked the first issue or two of Bilson and DeMeo's run, but then it sort of soured for me. But I don't want to see him go in a direction. It kind of feels like when, you remember when Wally became the mechanic for the police?
Yeah.
It feels like it's going to go down that same sort of path. And I'm sure he'll get plenty of contacts by working with the police, but you don't really need that out of this particular Flash, I feel like. John, do you like that direction of him becoming a policeman?
Well, he's going to be a forensic scientist. It's not like he's going to be a beat cop or something.
Mm-hmm.
And given his hero worship of Barry, it kind of makes sense. Do I think it's a great move? I'm of two minds. I mean, I don't think it's a horrible move. But it would be nice to see this character grow into something new and different than what we've seen before.
Yeah.
And given that Harry was the police forensic scientist, you know, Wally became mechanic for the cops, you know, it's like, go in a different direction. If this is a new Flash for a new generation, do new things with the character.
I guess I could see that, yeah. And actually, when you mention stuff like that, you know, for a new generation, right away, I actually think of the new generation of comic book writers that are going over to Hollywood. Specifically, I mean, you've got Brian K. Vaughan now going over to Lost, and you've got, obviously, Jeff Loeb working really well with Heroes so far. And you've got Jeff Johns, obviously, with his involvement on different stuff in Hollywood. It feels like more of the trade is going on. Hollywood writers come to comic books, comic book writers come to Hollywood. Do you feel the involvement is a positive for the comic book writers in Hollywood? Do you feel it's going to lead to more delays on their books? Specifically, I'm thinking, you know, in particular, Brian K. Vaughan, because he's one of my favorites, and I do not want to see, you know, delays on his comic books because he's working in Hollywood. I don't think it's going to happen, but are you at least a bit worried that perhaps overextending yourself might come into play with these guys?
Well, I think the Hollywood writers, you know, like, you know, maybe they are late because they're used to working on a couple projects at a time, you know, because some, like, a movie may not plan out or a TV series might not plan out. They always have something else on the back of burner. So since they're not used to comics are going to come out and this is going to happen, maybe that's why they feel like they have to work on multiple things. But Brian K. Vaughan, I mean, he's working, you know, everything of his is wrapping up. Runaways, he's done on that. You know, Why the Last Man, I'm sure, is plotted out at least till the end.
That's issue 60.
Issue 60.
The last one, yeah.
Right. Ex Machina, I guess, is going to continue for a little bit. But, I mean, you know, his Doctor Strange mini for Marvel's on number 4 out of 6 or something.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, even if he's getting too much into it, he's already halfway through those arcs, and he's probably got it mapped out at a point where he could finish them no problem.
Raph, do you feel this is going to be a good move for BKV and, for that matter, for other comic book writers that are making their way to Hollywood?
Yeah, I think so. Brent kind of stole my thunder there with the Brian K. Vaughan. Yeah, because he's wrapping up his stuff. He only has, like, maybe one or two titles he's working on consistently. Jeff Loeb is, he's only doing one monthly book, and until Ultimates number 13 comes out in 2010, he won't be working on Ultimates 3. So, yeah, and who else is there? Jeff Johns is doing like 60 books at a time. The guy, like, I don't know how he does it. He's doing JSA. He's going to be co-writing Teen Titans with Beechin until the arc's over. He's doing Superman with Richard Donner. He's doing 52. I mean, that guy, I don't know if he should take any more Hollywood projects. But for Jeff Johns, just himself.
I actually think he's doing my laundry in the other room right now, too. So he's a very overextended
really?
Guy, yeah.
Because he said he would cook me dinner. I mean, I'm waiting for him.
Damn. Yeah, well, it's an infinite wait for this guy, so.
Yes.
Yes, yes. Oh, God, that was bad.
It's 12:34.
Yes, guys are adopting the same laugh now.
Oh no!
I'll take Brian Christmas then.
Oh, go ahead. I'm scared beyond belief right now. Oh, and Brent, give him his thunder back.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, no stealing on my show. I don't like that. God damn it.
No stealing.
Yeah, but we got these Hollywood writers, and then we've got the Hollywood comics as well. We've got stuff like Army of Darkness in 24 right now. Would you like to see the Hollywood writers writing these titles, or do you feel this is a job more for the comic book writers to maybe perhaps give more of a comic book feel to them? Because I kind of like to see at least the plot being plotted out by some of the original creators, because usually that comes to a product that's a bit more on the mark, as it were. And John, what's your take on that, really? Specifically, like, the stuff like Army of Darkness 24, would you rather see an involvement from the original creators on that, along with comic book creators?
Well, one thing I'm really looking forward to these days is the new Buffy series Joss Whedon's doing over at Dark Horse.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's a great thing just all the way around. I mean, potentially that could leverage, you know, the huge following of Buffy. You know, with it being the theoretical season 8 or whatever being done in comic book form, you can get a lot of those fans into the comic book stores reading comics. I mean, that's a win all the way around. As for things like Army of Darkness, I don't really have any interest in the property whatsoever, so I really don't care.
Army of Darkness, Marvel Zombies, yes!
On 24, I've got no problem with the job that, you know, the comic book writers have been doing on the comic book. So I don't see any particular need for the Hollywood writers to get involved in that. I also don't have any particular problem with that, I don't think.
What story have they been telling in that, by the way? That's more of a prequel to the series, correct?
For 24?
Yeah.
They seem to be pretty much just, yeah, prequel, not connected to the main storylines and seasons and stuff.
Okay, I got you.
Because, of course, some of the writers who are doing the comics, you know, they got no clue where the hell the TV show's going to go.
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely, yeah. I mean, come on, just think about Lost. There's like maybe three people in that writer's room that actually know when the season's going, so.
Yeah, well, I think Lost, though, is a really interesting example because we're seeing a number of comic book writers over in that writing room for that show. And, you know, ones that have had some major delays. Again, the Ultimate Wolverine and Hulk miniseries comes to mind.
And
my only question on that is, I mean, they got, what, six episodes into season 3? And that was, you know, what, beginning of November?
Yeah.
And we haven't seen any episodes since?
That was on purpose, though.
Yeah, but still, it still pisses me off.
Still pisses me off, too. But
I'm actually less interested now in Lost than I have been in ages. And I admit half of it is because Heroes sort of stole its thunder to me. That's sort of like my new Lost. Lost and I sort of went through a divorce period now. I'm trying to, like, you know, reconcile with it to see if we can become, you know, friends and perhaps work our way back to being in a relationship again. But right now, Lost, I don't know. I mean, I'm looking very little forward to the episodes coming back.
But
I don't know.
See, I'm okay with it. I mean, I miss it, but they told us that from the beginning. When they were hyping up the season in like newspapers and stuff, they said it's going to be here for 6 episodes and we're going to have a break and then it's going to come back, no repeats. know, they're upfront about it.
I would rather have them wait until January to show it in the first place.
That's
what 24 does. You know, show 24 straight episodes. Even Alias did that back when Alias was still in his prime. You know, they started in January, did a straight season, and things were great like that. So,
actually, that was just the last season when it was in its downfall.
Oh, it was? I could have sworn it was the season before that also.
No, that was just this last season.
Okay, all right, my mistake on that. But no, just in general, I'd much rather see something straight, and if you do that, then that'll work. Because it adds to the fact that I feel like these writers are just perpetually late. You know, they can't get something out, like, straight. They have to have some sort of break and period in between there. And I know it takes a while to film this stuff, but still, it does not make me think positively about them.
Well, I mean, you know, I know people work 12 months a year and stuff, but even they, you know, even John gets a vacation from his day job, you know?
Sure.
And these writers have to put out something every month, no matter what. So, I mean, if they're writing one book, then I could understand you giving them shit for being late.
Yeah.
But,
John,
if they're doing multiple things.
Mean, to me, on the lateness with comics, it comes down to, you know, the publisher sets my expectation on when the book's coming out. If they say it's going to come out in, you know, the first week of December, and it doesn't, they set that date to begin with. They, you know, that I have problems with that. With the Hollywood writers, they have other time commitments. Some of that takes it more than they expected, whatever. I get that. But they shouldn't have committed to getting, be it a monthly book or a miniseries or whatever, done on a set schedule. They didn't realistically think they could meet and do so comfortably. And even if the writer or the creator thinks that, the publisher should be hedging their bets.
I think they're just looking for names more than they're looking for anything.
Oh, certainly, certainly. And they're doing it in a very foolish way, I think. While I think you're going to get a bit of a short-term bump from having a big-name Hollywood writer come and work on comics, there are a lot of big-name comic book writers that have done just some incredibly pivotal things in comics that I'm sure would love to be doing a monthly book from Marvel or DC or Image or somebody else, and their phones aren't ringing. You know, and that I have a problem with that. I think there's a lot of good things we could be reading and should be reading if the publishers would go with known quantities that have got a proven track record of writing good stories and writing them on time.
I'm with you on that, 100%. Yeah, I feel like it's got to be quality over names. Always has to be the case. If you can get a name that has quality, that's great. But if you get a great story from, you know, Joe Schmo from Albuquerque, who happens to put in a great concept and it works great, then I'm all for that. If you get, you know, Mr. Hollywood, who comes on in, does one issue, and you don't hear from him for 3 years, that just irks me. So I'm much, 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 much more going over the positive, on-time, great quality book than something that comes out terribly late and is just not up to expectations.
Well, I think that there are comic writers that are writing multiple titles, but I think they're writing multiple titles not to take away jobs from, like, you know, like John said in his audio comment, Marv Wolfman, you know, he's been out of the business for quite a long time, but, you know, whether he was kicked out or whether he decided to stop for a reason, that's, you know, that's his decision. I bet he could have come back at any time. You know, I think the people who are taking jobs away from new writers are these comic book writers who are writing more than one title. But I don't blame them, because comics doesn't pay that much. They have to write more than one title to sustain themselves.
Sure.
And then, you know, the Hollywood writers are Hollywood, so they've got other things going on, which is why they are just doing one title. And then also, let's talk about, like, how much do they love comics? Like, it's obvious Mark Guggenheim probably loves comics. He's writing three titles. Wilson and DeMeo might not love comics. Maybe they were asked to do it, you know, because it had a Flash TV show. Damon Lindelof was definitely asked to do it. Maybe has a general like of comics, but he doesn't love them absolutely enough to get it out on time.
Who's that guy from Carnival, by the way? I always forget his name. The guy who's doing Iron Man?
The Knopf brothers.
Oh, there we go. Okay. Yeah, their work is kind of iffy to me as well, but that's not their fault. They haven't been that late, but the book was late in the first place, so it's hard for me to really get into that book, considering the fact that it's not even giving us that much of Iron Man's side in Civil War. But anyway, John, go on with what you were going to say.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, we've got a couple of writers that are known quantities, have done some really well-received work for a long time. And, I mean, let's take Peter David as an example. He's done work for Marvel and DC and some independents. Has shown he can stay on a title for a prolonged period of time, can keep that title going for that length of time, and he doesn't get that many opportunities to start new titles. Going back over the last, I'm going to say, 5 or 10 years, you've got the X-Factor and the preceding Madrox series over at Marvel. You've got Fallen Angels. You have Supergirl. You have Young Justice. And I would be hard-pressed to name anything else that Peter David has basically been asked by Marvel or DC to do over the last 5 or 10 years. And there may be one or two examples.
The movie, I mean,
over that same time, Marvel and DC have been actively courting Hollywood writers. And in a lot of cases, those writers haven't been able to deliver it, or they have, and they've done it in a hit-and-run sort of a basis.
Dan Slott also is another name that comes to mind. Like, he is great on She-Hulk and the Thing, but those are like ancillary titles. Why not get him on Spider-Man? I mean, he's doing the Initiative, but get him on a Spider-Man book. Him and Peter David would be terrific.
Well, I think Dan Slott needs to move to DC.
Oh, yeah,
I don't think he's going to get a fair shake at Marvel these days.
I would love to see him on Spider-Man once JMS is done, but I don't know if they're going to go in that direction.
No, I think they already announced the writer. I forget who it was.
They haven't yet.
Okay, never mind that.
Yeah.
They're probably going to announce it closer to when JMS goes out with his One More Day crap with Quesada, yeah, if that comes out.
If you think about it, I mean, McKeever already made the move over to DC. So it's possible that a guy who's not getting that much love from Marvel like Dan Slott, at least not nearly as much as I think he should be, might make the move over to DC as well.
Well, it depends how you define getting the love. Do you define it as having your editor basically publicly lambast you for being a week late or so on a regular basis while letting other books be egregiously late? I mean, I think Slott's gotten kicked around quite a bit at Marvel.
Yeah.
Whereas higher profile writers have gotten, you know, a walk in the park on a number of things.
Well, think about it. I mean, Peter David, just think about that You Decide crap that happened a couple of years back. You know, I mean, that was basically just because of, you know, one guy in the Marvel office not liking Peter David and taking it out on him, basically. You know, saying, hey, I could write a better book than you. Oh, yeah, prove it. Well, guess what? He couldn't prove it because Peter David beat his ass, so.
Can you go over that again? I don't remember that.
You Decide was actually something that came out back, I believe it was about 3 years ago. Well, something like that now?
It might have been a little bit longer than that.
Okay. And You Decide was a choice when Haymus was still working with Marvel, and he had this feud going with Peter David. He thought Peter David couldn't write, and he said, "I'm going to write a better comic than you." So they started this You Decide contest to see which comic book would be able to outsell the other. Whichever one outsold would actually continue to be a comic. The other ones would get canceled. The choices were between Haymus's Marvel, Captain Marvel by
that.
Peter David, and Ultimate Adventures, which was the Batman and Robin ripoff. And that one, the Batman and Robin ripoff was terrible. Marvel barely sold anything, and Peter David kicked butt. I believe he about tripled the sales, if I remember correctly, of Marvel, and just dominated that entirely.
I remember reading Marvel. Wasn't that like, it was like a comedy title or something? It was a parody, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Well, that's like putting Ultimate Spider-Ham up to whatever else came out this week, Black Panther, you know?
Well, I think you could put Ultimate Spider-Man up with Watchmen, and, you know, they would totally be on the same equal footing there. I mean, come on. It's Ultimate Spider-Ham, you know? He's a pig.
He's a ham. He's not a pig.
Oh dude.
That's what he says in the book.
Oh, my God. In general, I have to say, I want to see more Captain Carrot, and I want to see more Spider-Ham. Just the way I am.
Okay. We'll go pick up that book for you. There you go.
Yeah, right. Yeah, but no, I just pretty much we're just saying right here that, you know, we'd rather get better, you know, quality stuff from, you know, writers that we enjoy than, say, you know, random Hollywood writers, and that's the way that goes.
Lindelof.
Yes. Lindelof. Or guys like maybe Bruce Jones.
The alien in my stomach just writhes in pain.
I had to get at least one Bruce Jones reference in here just to see the aliens in the stomach just go
rattling. Raph has a tapeworm. Raph has a Bruce Jones hating tapeworm.
Oh, my. It's going to turn into a pimple-eating monster any second now.
John, do you have no CPR?
Even if I do, I'm not going to use it in this case. I'm out of his measure.
I mean, how many books is Mark Waid working on? One? Get him on a couple of books. Forget Bruce Jones. Jesus. Oh. Stop the pain.
It'll be okay, man. It'll be okay. Okay. We'll get Chuck Austin and Bruce Jones to co-write something. It'll be fine.
Oh, my God. The apocalypse has come.
Let's get the last comments in here before we go to the forum comments. Last thing I have here is whether or not the trade between Hollywood and comic books will continue well into the future. I feel it will because, well, it seems to be benefiting both of them enough to continue getting talent both from comics to go to Hollywood and Hollywood to go to comics. I mean, sure, we do have the negatives in there, but hey, JMS hasn't been too bad. Alan Heinberg minus the delays hasn't been too bad. I mean, you've got enough people that have proven that they can write comics to keep going to the well, as it were. But at the same time, like we said many a time before, give the regular comic book writers their due too. And even give them some Hollywood stuff to do, because it makes sense there. I'd say the trade's probably going to continue well into the future. And, John, what's your opinion on that?
I think one of the most exciting things we're seeing in this area is really what's going on with Bruce Timm. DC has found, I think, a brilliant way to leverage Bruce Timm's interest in comics and his expertise in animation to be kind of championing, you know, taking things like New Frontiers, the Teen Titans Judas Contract storyline, and projects like that, keeping the original art style, storyline, and, you know, spirit of the comics, and then putting them together as, you know, animated direct-to-DVD features. I mean, that's, as much as I might like to see Bruce Timm work on comics and do things of that nature, I think this is a much better use of his time and talent in something that could benefit the comic industry significantly more in the long term.
And you talk about Timm, you got to talk about Dini also. I mean, Dini's been putting out fantastic work on his Batman title. And, I mean, this is a guy who also, you know, he's dipped himself in the well many a time in Hollywood and, you know, come out of it clean. And, you know, he can do Hollywood or comic books better than most can, to say the least. And he puts out regular work on a regular basis and never late either.
That's always a good thing, too. Get it out on time. Yeah.
Definitely. Brent, what about you? Do you feel the trade's going to continue?
I think the train wreck is going to continue.
The train wreck?
Yeah.
Really?
The train wreck?
Oh, God.
Sorry.
Okay. So you actually think that this is a negative? Is that it? Or were you
just
making a pun? No, I said, do you feel the trend is going to continue?
Of Hollywood writers?
Yeah.
No, I'm serious. I think it's a train wreck, and it's going to continue. I mean, it's not really a train wreck. I think I'm over-exaggerating it a little bit. We have good Hollywood writers, and we have bad Hollywood writers. Whether or not we're going to continue Hollywood writers is only up to, you know, DC and Marvel. And I think we are, based on us getting more and more by, you know, every solicitation day. The quality of their stuff is only as good as, you know, them and the editors that push them to get it out on time, or the editor who decides, you know, let's wait until it's done to solicit it.
Okay. Pretty much that sums it up, man. That does tell you the truth, because, yeah, the editors that actually wait until something is done, I want to pat them on the back and give them a hug.
Like All-Star Batgirl, you know, it was announced, but it's not coming out because I don't think they've really started or, you know, it's not done.
Yeah, and that's the difference there. It's one thing to say that something is coming but not say when, but when you announce something and give a general idea of, yeah, no, it'll definitely be out by the end of the year, and then the end of the year comes, and then the end of the next year comes, and the end of the next year comes, and it's not out, that's something I hate to see. But we're not seeing that with this title. They just said it's going to come out. So when it does come out, more power to it.
Yeah, like All-Star Batman, you know?
Ugh.
They keep saying it's going to come out, it's going to come out. And Jim Lee just posted on his like MySpace blog. I don't know why I subscribe to it on MySpace, but I do. He just posted some video of, you know, they had these sketch duel things. And they're talking about this on the latest episode of CGS. Like, he posted a bunch of videos, and he basically did a pin-up piece of Nightcrawler and Harley Quinn, and they videotaped it, and it was like you only had an hour to do it. But it was a fantastic Jim Lee piece, and as I watched them this morning, and as he was doing it, he was saying, you know, oh, if I was drawing this for a book, I would have erased Harley Quinn's little circle thing on the end of her headband three times and made it a perfect circle. Why don't give a crap about a perfect circle on the end of Harley Quinn's headband? It still looked like a fantastic piece of Jim Lee art, and if he didn't, you know, wasn't such a perfectionist, we wouldn't have his problem there on that book.
Well, now, not only that,
because he's come out and said it's not Frank Miller, it's me. That's why I'm picking on him.
In their defense, All-Star Batman and Robin the Boy Wonder actually got an entire issue out during the year 2006.
It was a great annual. Best annual I've ever read for 2006. Yeah. But actually, he's also, well, Jim's also working on Wildcats. He also he's also the head of Wildstorm. He has to oversee the entire reboot. He's in charge of the DCU MMORPG, I believe. And he also hosts poker games every now and then.
Yeah, so it's
Wizard.
It's less of Jim Lee's, you know, work style than it is his lifestyle, basically. If he can find time to host poker games instead of drawing, you know, the books that he created.
I think it takes less time and effort to host a poker game than to draw an entire issue of a comic.
I highly agree with that.
Well, true, but he could be drawing instead of playing poker at the same time.
Mm. And to tie it back to Hollywood, when you're talking about All-Star Batman and Robin, you got to talk about Frank Miller and the fact that he's been doing outstanding stuff with Sin City and 300. And I cannot wait to see 300. That looks absolutely
either.
Amazing from the previews. So yes. I am going to be first in line to see that once it comes out.
Yes, I can't wait for 300 either.
Yay.
Comes out right after my birthday.
Oh, cool. So you can see it as a birthday present.
As a geek together, yeah, that'd be cool.
Yay. Yeah, Raph, do you feel like the trend is going to continue well into the future of Hollywood and comic books uniting?
I think it's going to have to. I mean, you have to have these comic book movies come out, and eventually to have that, obviously that's the main part of the comic book movie crossover, the movies themselves. But then you also have to have the writers coming in, because at one point there's going to be some guy who writes for some show going, hey, you know, I really like Spider-Man, and it's going to be a really hot show, and they go, okay, you know, you can write Spider-Man. Look at Mark Verheiden. He was a producer of Smallville. He wrote like a handful of episodes. He got to do Superman. He's doing Superman Batman right now. Whether or not those are good runs, I'm not going to say, but you're always going to have someone who's interested in comics, whether they're a fan or whether they just want to dabble. So I think that's in general. I mean, you're going to, even from other areas, like Brad Meltzer came in, he was a fan, he writes novels, he's done his Identity Crisis stuff. I mean, it's going to have to continue in order for the medium to grow, because Brian Michael Bendis is involved with his projects getting into movies. You know, it's going to have to continue.
Well,
you
bring up, you know, good points that the Hollywood writer influx is mainly because of the, you know, the comic book movies. I think it all started with X-Men, and maybe more so X-Men 2, when we started getting all these guys to come and do it.
Yeah, well, X-Men 2 proved that X-Men wasn't a fluke.
That's true.
Yeah.
And then I think the Hollywood writers took more notice of comics, or they remembered the comics that they used to read. But, you know, Brad Meltzer he writes it very well, and I think he respects the form of comic books and the fans, because, you know, he's very upfront with Justice League. He said, I'm only staying on for 12 or 13 issues, but they're all done as I'm speaking. Like, he had them first six issues scripted, and then he said he had, like, the rest plotted. He knew where he was going. He's done. So then he'll go back to writing a book for a year and then come back to comics. You know, he did a Green Arrow run that was, like, 12 or 6 issues, whatever, and he did Identity Crisis, which was basically a year ago from what this, you know, this new JLA arc is. So I think he's very respectful of the comics industry, whereas other writers maybe aren't. And I think that's our problem. We need writers that are respectful of the industry that they're working in.
Meltzer simply gets it. That's the best way to put it. He just absolutely gets it. He gets both sides of things, and way too many just only get one side of the spectrum. We got some forum comments here that I wanted to get into before we actually wrap things up here. In particular, we've got Esteban89 starting things off here, and here's what he has to say. I only want to touch on a few creators here. David Goyer is one of the only writers in the biz that is able to also maintain a comic career, one guy that we didn't mention. So I'm glad he actually mentioned that here, because Goyer, wow, he is damn good. Blade movies, Batman Begins, and the Blade series were all, in my opinion, excellent. When he was writing JSA, it was excellent. True Goyer has written a couple stinkers, such as David Hasselhoff's vehicle, Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Curly hair and an eye patch. Yeah, I gotta go wrong.
Make the pain stop. But he has redeemed himself. Alan Heinberg is probably the mid-range of writers. While the books he has produced over the last couple of years have been plagued with delays, they have come out and are often quite good. One main problem I do have with Heinberg is what he does to TV shows. And this is, again, his opinion here. That's all I'm saying. Heinberg came to the OC, and when he showed up, the show got shitty. Pardon my French. Once he left, the show is now going to be canceled. I just hope that he doesn't ruin Grey's Anatomy this season and then try to slink away. You really think it's Heinberg's fault that the OC went downhill?
You watch the OC?
No, but I'm asking if anybody here does.
Well, you kind of defended it like you have, you know. This is only his opinion.
I've heard good things. It's not my type of show, but from people who have watched it, I've heard good things.
The only people that I know that watch it are my friends that are girls.
Mm-hmm.
And the same people who watch Dawson's Creek religiously, so I stayed away from it.
Okay, I'm done.
I actually used to watch Dawson's Creek. Not the proudest moment of my life. Anyway, let's move on.
There you go. So nobody here watches the OC?
No.
Okay, just wanted to double check there.
I watched the Simpsons spoof on that one episode.
That's good. Any Simpsons spoof is worth it, so. The lowest grade of Hollywood writers, in my opinion, is populated by the likes of Damon Lindelof and Kevin Smith, which we didn't really touch too much on this episode other than the fact that, you know, he's late. Ultimate Hulk and Wolverine, what the hell? Spider-Man Black Cat, what the hell? Daredevil Bullseye the Target, what the hell? While I will admit that I quite enjoyed Smith's run on Green Arrow, I think that might have been Smith's one-hit wonder. Just my opinion, don't flame me, guys. Do you feel it's his one-hit wonder? Do you think he'll ever be able to write comics again and, you know, have them come out before the century's over?
No.
Daredevil. He had a decent run on Daredevil.
Oh, no, that was
good. With comics.
But that was years ago, too.
Exactly.
Yeah, that was 98.
John,
that was 10 years ago. Can you imagine? Years ago?
Wow, it really has been 10 years. Holy crap, time flies.
Yeah, well, that's before he got huge. That's before Dogma. Dogma came out in, like, 98, 99.
Yeah.
And then he just basically went Hollywood after that.
John, do you feel Kevin Smith's Marvel and DC days are well behind him?
Well, I really do want to see them finish Daredevil the Target. I mean, that's a four-issue series. I'm invested a quarter of the way in. I want to know how the story ends. Now, granted, that first issue came out, late 2002?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I'd have to go dig through, you know, my collection to go find the thing. It's been so long since I've read it. No, he'll do some more comics. He likes the medium. He can do some good comics. I just hope whoever publishes his next work actually makes him, you know, write it all before they give it to any artist and before they solicit any of it.
Well, see, at least your comics are organized where you'll probably be able to find it. Mine, I am never seeing that book again.
I think Ian uses his comics to hold his bed up evenly.
It's true, actually. True story.
My concern is that by the time the second, much less the final issue of Daredevil the Target comes out, I'm going to be, you know, 4,300 years old or something. You know, it's
living in a glass jar.
Yeah.
Only your head.
Unless you're one of the Highlander people.
You have to conquer all the comic nerds to get their life force.
Oh, God. Yeah. I want to see that
movie.
Only one. That would be an awesome, awesome movie. That's all I'm saying. The Geeklander.
Yeah, just keep that clean soundtrack.
Hey, Raph, there's your next comic project, The Geeklander.
Yes, I'll work on it as soon as I finish Crisis on Infinite Bullets, which is moving slower than All-Star Superman, but moving faster than Daredevil Target, Ultimate Hulk vs. Wolverine, and what's the other one? All-Star Batman. See, guys, I'm 22, I don't get paid, and I still do it. What?
Oh, come on, what about me, man? Jeez, I'm 22 also, and I gotta edit this damn podcast.
Well, no, I'm not talking to you guys, I'm talking to Damon Lindelof, Kevin Smith, and the other guys.
And you're going to school.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right, you big, fat, rich bastards.
Yeah.
And you have a social life.
In Kevin Smith's defense on the Spider-Man Black Cat fiasco, it turns out that people were giving him some flack for a while, having gotten paid for stuff he hadn't written and all that. Turns out that wasn't the case. He hadn't gotten paid for those issues. The reason he hadn't gotten paid? Hadn't actually signed the check, or the contract. So he was a couple of years late in doing that, too.
Right.
So you mean he wrote a book, gave it to the artist and an editor before he signed the contract to do it?
They actually got, if I understand the story correctly, and I could be totally wrong on this, they got those couple issues actually out there, published, etc., and they had changed over their payment system or something like that. He had to turn in some piece of paperwork. That didn't get done. Essentially got delayed on stuff. That was one of the things they trotted out with the, oh yeah, we're actually finishing the series, and ho ho, isn't this funny?
Ho ho ho.
Yeah. That sounds more like the original contract expired or something.
It's possible.
I don't know.
Faded from, you know, years of decay. I don't know.
Well, I spoke to Terry Dodson at a Big Apple Comic Con last April, and he was like, yeah, I finally got the script from Kevin. So maybe it's a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. I'll give him that much credit because I like him. Like, you know, his contract wasn't up, so he wasn't settled, so he didn't write issues 3 and 4 until, you know, they settled it because he wanted the contract done or whatever.
Yeah, well.
I'll accept that.
There's always red tape, specifically when Kevin Smith is involved, but what are you going to do? All right, we got Equinox's comments here, nice and simple. Joss Whedon, yay, verily. Mark Guggenheim, yay, another verily. Brad Meltzer, yay. David Lindelof, nay. Bilson DeMeo, hell nay. That's nice, I like that. I'm going to have to use that in my speech in regular life now. Hell nay. Straczynski, yay, only if it's Supreme Power. And Alan Heinberg, yay, only if it's a limited series. And I believe he must have been reading Thor before he actually wrote that response.
What? Thor? Heinberg? What?
No, yay verily.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
I totally want credit for the yay nay thing. I started this on this thread.
Fine.
You skipped over my post.
Yeah, it's because you're on the show, man.
I understand, but that's never happened before. I just want the credit.
He wants to do his voice.
At the beginning of Equinox, it says, a la Brent.
Yes.
If anybody cares.
It's okay, Brent. It's okay. You want a hug?
I don't want a digital hug.
Hug this out. Come on, guys. Hug this out. Real men hug.
I love you, man.
I think John's backing away from his computer now. It's descended into a regular Comic Timing podcast now instead of a classic one.
Please.
So who's singing?
Okay, you have to remember, John was on the Just Bill episode.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. But Just Bill is a man of John's age and same humor caliber than us.
Okay.
Yes, us with our little poo-poo jokes.
Oh, God.
You've made an enemy of the Mayo.
One of the comments I got on my podcast, well, it's got that John Mayo style. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Your poll was way too long.
Oh, jeez. Meanwhile, Comic M has this to say. I say yay to most of them. Kevin Smith did an awesome job on Daredevil and Green Arrow. Spider-Man Black Cat and then Daredevil Target made me lose faith. Young Avengers and Wonder Woman were very good, but I would like to see more issues. Astonishing X-Men, fantastic. Don't know much about the guy writing Ultimate Hulk Wolverine, but Jeff Loeb is in TV, and he always produces great comics. Meltzer is one of my favorite comic book writers. He did a television series in the past, but I cannot remember the title.
Jack and Bobby.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. All right.
WB.
There we go. Yeah, that was that one about, like, one of them was going to become president, right?
Yeah,
but it was set in modern times. I didn't understand that whole thing.
Yeah, I was thinking it was JFK and, you know, RFK, but...
It was supposed to be.
So it was like if JFK and RFK were, like, growing up in the year 2003?
Yeah, but it's like them teenagers. I don't know what the connection would be, though.
Okay.
Yeah, moving on.
Well, then again, there's a reason why the WB isn't a network anymore.
Yeah. No more Dawson's Creek.
Been retconned.
Yeah, exactly. Have not read the Donner issues yet. Straczynski's stuff is hit or miss with me. I love Squadron Supreme, Supreme Power, and enjoy Spider-Man. His Rising Stars and Midnight Nation, I loved. What is Midnight Nation? I've had it mentioned before, but I have never even heard of that before.
It might be like another 12 Rising Stars
that Straczynski did at Top Cow. It was good. It was not brilliant. I didn't think that, but I think Straczynski's best work was Babylon 5.
Was it a Rising Star sequel or something different?
No, it totally disconnected. What would be a good way to describe it? I mean, it was totally different universe and stuff. Like I said, came up with 4 Rising Stars. Basic premise is certain people kind of fall off the grid, if you will, and society just kind of forgets about them, and this is the story of one of those guys. It was very much written as a 12-issue story, and did a good job at that.
Okay. Mayo with the save.
That's why you're on the show, John, because you know a lot more than us.
And he does for podcasts what real Mayo does for sandwiches.
Makes it taste delicious?
Yes. Yes, this podcast is delicious. Too many bad puns.
Yeah. Ah, well. Oh, he finishes that off with Rising Stars ended kind of weak, though. Goyer on JSA was awesome. That's my 2 cents. Modern Lover has this to say. Love Smith's Green Arrow, and I haven't read any of the things of his people don't like. Meltzer's a favorite. Haven't read any JMS, but if he did half the things he did to Spidey to a character I cared about, I'd be pretty pissed.
Ouch.
Ouch. Ouch. I mean, is his Spidey really that bad?
Well, he tries to put his own spin on the origin of the characters. He did the whole totem aspect with Spider-Man. He tried to tweak a couple aspects or of the Fantastic Four origin. You know, here's what it really means. And that rubs people the wrong way.
Yeah. Well, he did that with Spider-Man and Fantastic Four. It seems like he can't go onto a book without changing their origin.
He needs an original series. Original characters.
Yeah, well, that's why people like Rising Stars so much, because it was his.
Well, and Supreme Power also. Like, hasn't he radically changed Hyperion and all them?
Sure he did, yeah. Well, it's the ultimate Squadron Supreme, basically.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Love Alan Heinberg, ditto for Bilson and DeMeo, but keep in mind, I've only been reading the excellent Red Menace and haven't touched Flash. Don't know much about the others. So I guess if you don't actually read Flash, Bilson and DeMeo are awesome.
Red Menace is a great read. I really recommend it.
What company is that out of?
That's DC.
Wildstorm.
Oh, okay.
You got Jerry Ordway art, just some great stuff.
Cool. Awesome. I'll definitely have to remember that. All right. Comic Noob Dyer has this to say. I believe it is a good thing for the comic book industry. Whenever you get people with some talent or love that want to do a book, it's a good thing. Sure, they will need time to adjust to comic deadlines and the format, but I don't see the downside. If they aren't good comic writers, they will eventually weed themselves out. And that's Comic Noob Dyer, Brent Cassina's favorite person.
Oh, you missed the P.S. It says P.S. Stop Brent from singing.
Go ahead, Brent. Sing us a tune. Sing us a tune. Do it. Do it. Just for him.
Yes, do it.
No, no. He started his own podcast, so I told him I'd send him some hate mail or something for that.
He did actually start his own podcast, and the website is www.switchpod.com/cats.php ?A=7486.
What is this, math test?
Yes.
The answer is 52.
We're taking the SATs. Oh, actually, funny story. On a regular basis, whenever I would get to page 52 in the work I was doing for Pokemon this past week, I would just smile. 52!
It's everywhere.
Yes. Jurassic Alien has this to say, I personally have no problem with Hollywood people coming into the industry as long as they have stories to tell and time to tell them. The main thing is time. Ultimate Hulk vs. Wolverine is a great example of suffering from time. The first 2 issues were fun, and I wanted to see where this book was heading. Wonder Woman being another sufferer of the same problem. If Hollywood people enjoy comics, then that's great. More power to them. If they want to work on them, also great. But they also have to know they can do it in a manner that will not leave fans wanting. Whedon, on the other hand, gets a lot of flack for his books being bi-monthly, but the fact of the matter is that we get more than an issue or 2 a year, and that's true there. If you got to make it bi-monthly, so be it. The only other problem I see with Hollywood and comics is that they seem to get a project whenever they want it. I believe it was Joe Quesada who said he felt they paid their dues in Hollywood. Ugh. I don't know if that's a really a good statement to make about that.
Well, I suppose technically it's true. I mean, they're paying their dues to the Writers Guild. I know that's not what they meant.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what he meant. Right. Well, the world is all about money, so let's just say what that is. Which is why some writers didn't have to have an indie book before getting an A character. Sometimes it makes sense, like JMS on Spider-Man or Kevin Smith on Daredevil, both writers. But Reginald Hudlin directed House Party. House Party. And a bad Eddie Murphy movie.
Which he can't even name.
Yeah. Right. Why is he writing Black Panther?
Now, Black Panther's pretty good these days, though.
Not the last issue. You haven't read it yet, because it just came out, John, but it's terrible.
Well, thank you for setting my expectations. You've totally ruined the issue.
it's actually not that bad. It's okay, I guess.
Oh, now you're just an apologist for it.
Yeah, I'm an apologist for everything.
I already told Raph why I hated it earlier, but I don't think we want to get onto that in this podcast.
We're saving that for my Geek Shoe Night.
Yeah. Oh, no. The one reason why I do actually hate this Black Panther is because it actually tears apart some of the previous work on Black Panther. You know, like, it rewrites his history, and I didn't really like that too much. But that's my opinion on that, because Priest's stuff was really, really great.
No, that's true. That's true. And this is a very different kind of a take on some stuff. So I'll grant you that.
Yeah.
The Ultimate Black Panther, aside from the DVD, have they, like, done a comic book version yet?
No.
I don't think they have.
But you know what? He's probably going to be the same. It was in the Avengers movie. He's the exact same.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I think they're going to make him Chinese.
Oh, that'd be great.
No.
Yellow Raph power. Would be in support of that.
Even better than that, he will be Mongolian.
Yeah.
He'd be from Laos or something.
Ooh.
Some obscure country.
Ooh, he'll be from Reykjavik.
What? What is that?
It's a place.
I vaguely remember that place.
Yeah, Reykjavik is the capital of some country.
Yeah, you're right. I just don't remember which country. One of those comes in San Diego.
Yeah, thank you. I was actually at a taping of that once.
It was a cartoon.
Yeah. But dude.
Game show, I think.
The game show. Hello.
Okay, right.
PBS.
Right. Okay.
Yeah,
with the black lady that was like the judge.
Yeah, with Rockapella.
The angry black lady.
Rockapella.
I remember. So, John, do you remember?
I don't think John wants to remember, even if he does.
About my advanced age. Humor.
We're trying to bring down the class of this episode of Comic Timing to get it back to regular.
It always ends up at the end. This always happens at the end of the episode.
Because we're doing forum comments for like the third time on the same episode.
Yeah. So I'm fine with Hollywood coming into the picture as long as they earn their keep and actually put out the work. I don't care if I like what you did in Hollywood. It doesn't mean you get a free pass in comics, so definitely true there. And right away after that, Heath Holland, H-007, responds with, Og. I believe that's how you pronounce the word. Og. Hollywood writers get on my last nerve. There are plenty of capable writers that are having a hard time finding work. We don't Thank need you. Writers who can't hit deadlines or who don't get the format. With a very few exceptions, I say there should not be Hollywood writers in comics. That's a bit hard right there.
Yeah, that is pretty harsh.
Yeah, but I guess, you know, it's perfectly, you know, you're allowed to have your opinion there, Heath. So I humbly disagree with that statement. So that's the best way to put that. But yeah, I guess so. Blockhead, great username, I must say. Blockhead has this to say. I'll admit it if I see a solicit that touts the writer as coming from some Hollywood place. It's a mark against that book. I'm not even sure why I feel that way. Maybe it's because I think they won't write well for the format or that they'll be really late. And that could get to you after a while, the subconscious feelings. If you read enough late books, you're just going to automatically assume that they're late. Yeah. It's going to be a major problem there. Straczynski has written enough comics now that he's as much a comics writer as a Hollywood writer. His TV scripts probably still outnumber his comic scripts, but he's been writing comics steadily for several years now. I certainly haven't read any comics from Hollywood writers that were markedly better than the comics from comic writers. Whedon's Astonishing X-Men had been great, in my opinion, but there are plenty of things out there just as good. The key to that note, I think, is letting a good writer tell stories without all the crossovers and junk. And, yeah, if you're a new writer, don't get stuck on a crossover, because then you're stuck with another person's story, pretty much. And you don't really get a chance to really get any personality into it. You know, you're stuck doing a story that's already been passed down to you, which is a bit ridiculous. So I'm sure you guys pretty much agree with that, right?
A good writer can do a crossover story, hit whatever plot points need to be hit to fill the requirements of the crossover, and still tell a very entertaining story.
Guggenheim on Wolverine.
I was going to say Peter David on X-Factor. It can be done. It's tough. But that's something that I think in this day and age of, you know, common, you know, crossover event stuff going on is a skill that comic writers need to acquire.
Yeah. Couldn't have said it better myself, pretty much. I'm not even going to add anything to that because you pretty much just have it all down there. I'm going to skip this Wraithmaker guy because he's, I don't know, he's kind of lame. Beastbone says, Joss Whedon equals yay! That's all I have to say about it. One good issue of Astonishing X-Men makes up for every late and pretty uninteresting issue of Heinberg's Wonder Woman. So, again, a strong statement to make, but kind of agree with that. Astonishing X-Men's been great, so.
No, I agree. Astonishing X-Men's brilliant, yeah. But I'm enjoying Heinberg's Wonder Woman on the rare occasions when it comes out.
You know, it's on a semi-annual basis.
Well, let's see. We've gotten 3 issues in August, September, October, November, December. 3 issues in 7 months. Yeah, it's about quarterly.
Yeah, and that's not quite good for a 1 year later title.
Yeah, it's not. But, you know, I think he's going to wrap it up this March. He's going to have 2 issues in a month, I think.
Well, whoop-de-frickin-do. Too little too late for me, you know? At this point, we've gotten more Wonder Woman in Justice League and in Manhunter than we've gotten in our own book.
Pretty sad.
Yeah. All right, Matthew Guy responded, and this is what he has to say for that. Is this trend beneficial to the comic book industry, or does it do nothing but present less jobs for the already established comic book creator? He says usually no, citing Wonder Woman 1-5 delays, and even the delays with Donner John's run on Action is beginning to be a bit much for me. Have 6 to 8 issues of a 12-issue run in the can for soliciting a project. We already agree with that, definitely. What properties do you feel Hollywood creators have achieved on? He says, Smallville writers working on comics made me drop Superman Batman after number 30. Who from Smallville is writing Superman Batman?
Mark Verheiden.
He's okay. Not that bad.
Yeah?
I think just the art delays are turning him off. I'm actually kind of enjoying the book.
Well, I haven't read it, so I can't really say anything.
It's not terrific. It's okay.
Well, it's confusing. I think it's going to read better when you read it back to back.
Is Vince Skipper still on art?
No.
No.
Oh.
He just has covers.
Okay. He left to do the Sinestro Corps annual.
Gotcha. Mm. Okay. Which I can't wait for, so I'd much rather him do that.
Yeah.
I just couldn't take it anymore, and I like season 6 of Smallville. The outgoing Flash team was about to be dropped at number 6 until a new team was announced, so I ordered 7 and 8 to keep a run on the title, but after 6 issues with the new team, I will decide to keep or drop. Would you rather Hollywood writers stick to Hollywood comics? Let's see here. Personally, unless they can get the work done in a very timely manner, then the answer is a resounding no. So usually Hollywood and comic books don't mix unless it is the comic book movies themselves. Batman Begins, Superman Returns, The Punisher with Thomas Jane, Daredevil the Director's Cut, not the regular cut. The exception to this rule, Friday the 13th films transformed into great comics thanks to Gray and Palmiotti putting a great horror book from a movie series together from Hollywood into a great comic for fans like me, and I enjoyed The Nightmare on Elm Street from Chuck Dixon also. I'm really glad I didn't say nose. Really enjoy the nose. So overall, it is a bad idea usually, but if a comics writer dabbles into Hollywood movies, it usually turns out better than when a Hollywood writer is involved in comics to a large degree, because he is focused on other things and leaving the comic book behind as an afterthought much of the time. Have you guys been reading the horror comics that he mentioned at all, by the way? Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street?
No.
No, I heard Sean and Jim do speeding bullets on them 3 episodes back. They said it was good.
John, what about you?
I don't do horror.
Ah, well.
That's a resounding no from the panel.
Wow.
Another resounding no.
Well, I'll take his word on it that it's good. I'm sure it probably is, but I'm not really much of a horror comic guy, so I'll probably have to shy away from that. Equinox actually had a response, which then led to Matthew Guy having another great post. So let me read the Equinox response here. Give me a break. It's not usually a bad idea. With the exception of the universally reviled craptastic writing on The Flash, all of the problems you mentioned above could have been taken care of with some more editorial control on the various books or the publisher soliciting the Hollywood writers' run as either a miniseries or after it was all in the can. Companies can make responsible decisions sometimes, a la Jeff Smith's upcoming Shazam project. We would just be better off if they made better decisions most of the time. Bad writing doesn't always follow the same people all the time either. While I can't comment on it myself due to not reading Red Menace supposedly, the creative team from The Flash does a serviceable job on that project. Good writers with the wrong characters can make for bad comics, which was then responded with this. Other Shazam projects like Superman Batman First Thunder was late, and it only had 4 issues with crappy art that was not worth the wait. I actually enjoyed the art on Superman Shazam First Thunder, so I'm going to have to disagree with that. You guys read that?
Read it.
Yeah,
no.
I'll pick it up on trade.
Okay. I just think comics should be handled with care by comics writers and book writers like Meltzer or Rucka, and not Hollywood big shots who want to pad their resume with comics that is usually late and of poor quality in the end. I want the Hollywood Times out unless they put in the can before solicit as Wonder Woman is delayed. Superman in Action Comics is at an irregular shipping lately, and I just want quality writers and artists to do the job on time, if not let the next person in a line give it a try that has talent. Superman Batman jumped the shark after issue 26, and Loeb left for Marvel when he's replaced with a Smallville writer. Hollywood writers equal late subpar comics in most cases. And that's Matthew Guy, with one more response from Equinox, which I will read right now, because, well, yet again, it was a good one. Again, even the example above doesn't make sense, since a strong editorial presence can fix most timeliness issues. Meltzer or Rucka don't guarantee online books. Editors such as Walker or Siglane take care of that, because a finished book is dependent on much more than just the writer. I believe that is one of the reasons that Marvel courted and bagged Walker more than anyone else. They saw the job he was doing with 52 and thought he could help them fix their own internal problems with shipping delays. Now, this whole back and forth here brings up a lot of interesting points, specifically the fact that, you know, that most of the time they're not putting out good stuff. But again, Equinox makes a good point. Sometimes it's as important that the editors are good along with the writers. So that's as important here. I mean, we didn't really touch too much on the editors, but that can lead to delays sometimes.
Well, I think it's more important if the editor be good, because the bottom line is, if there's any problems with the book in terms of quality, in terms of timeliness, that's the editor's job to make sure that kind of stuff doesn't happen. You know, and we've seen plenty of cases. Certainly 52 is a recent example, but you go back to the Superman titles under Mike Carlin's tenure, when it was essentially a weekly book, 52 weeks a year, for a couple of years.
Yeah.
I mean, that had to be pretty hard for Mike Carlin to juggle all of that, yet he did it, and did it very well. We have a lot of editors these days whose background is, well, they were assistant editors before, which is very different from the days when you had people who used to either have done some writing or done some art or had some experience on the creative side of things and brought more to the table than just, I watched somebody else do this job for a while. That's a harsh statement, and I know that. But I feel that a lot of the problems plaguing comic books these days could be fixed with better qualified, better trained, better experienced editors. You know, I think that would do a world of good for a lot of things, certainly in terms of lateness.
I'm all for that. Better training is always a good thing.
Yeah, if you look at Marvel, like, look at the two big series they have. They have Civil War with Brevoort. And, you know, Brevoort was voted Man of the Year, I think, or something, or Editor of the Year at Wizard. And I think he's done a pretty good job with organizing Civil War. But you look at Andy Schmidt over at Annihilation. They haven't missed a beat in Annihilation. It's been on time. It's a less heralded series, but it's also a very excellent series. And I think they deserve credit.
Definitely.
I think both editors made mistakes, but I think they made very different ones for different reasons. And out of the two, I would say the editor on Annihilation has done overall a better job in terms of competence at his job unfortunately, that series got overshadowed by Civil War.
Yeah.
And that's yet again, mistake. Keith Giffen is everywhere.
Yes.
He is 52.
I'm going to skip down to LT Smash here with this quick comment here. LT Smash says, the sad thing about Ultimate Wolverine versus Hulk is that the two issues that came out were excellent. And yeah, but you know what? It doesn't make me want to read it anymore. When you're that late, I have no reason to read something.
I don't remember them.
Say that again?
It's been so long, I don't even remember the first two issues. In that time, I've probably read another 1,000 comics. Easily.
Quite possible.
Yeah, well, you know what? Actually, kind of at this point, the only thing I remember is Wolverine being ripped in half.
Yeah, that's the only part I remember, too.
And Hulk is a pimp.
Yeah. I don't remember how Wolverine got his legs back.
He grew them.
He grew them back.
He did? Or did he find them and just, like, reconnect himself? I don't remember. How does that work? Wait, how does that work?
Next issue, if it ever ships.
To be continued.
Doesn't Wolverine, like, walk over to where the Hulk is pimping those girls at the end of issue 2 or something? Isn't that the end of issue 2? Okay, well, who am I going to ask? Nobody knows. Everybody's forgotten it by now.
Wait.
It's so complicated, because, like, if you, let's say he grew his legs back, where's the adamantium? He's lost his adamantium in his legs.
By the time the next issue ships, Ultimate Wolverine will have gone through the storylines where he gets the adamantium back and removed again.
and become Apocalypse, the Horseman of Death for Apocalypse.
Yes, actually.
And defeat Ultimate Onslaught.
Let's move on to David D's comment here. It's actually the fact that he couldn't make us, at least he was still able to send us a great, great comment here. And it's very well thought out, and here we go. I apologize that I ended up not being able to be a part of this episode. Ian and John made valiant attempts, but the technology to connect the phone at my desk, Grandpa is still on a landline here, no Skype or Gizmo like the kids these days, didn't work out. So I will add my 2 cents here to the conversation, and I look forward to hearing the rest. I'm going to break this up into the parts like he did. So we're going to make a comment first on his first part here, which is writers are writers. I think the idea of a professional writer who is making a living writing comic books is more and more rare. Or perhaps it has always been rare. When you are a professional writer, you are first and foremost that. I would imagine there are very few professional writers that are comics only, and in that group, it may not be long before they are mixing in writing for other media. Even some of the most successful comic writers today, ones with exclusive contracts to one big company or the other, have written for television, film, or video games. Bendis wrote for an animated Spider-Man TV show, as well as a video game. He wrote or is currently writing screenplays for some of his creator-owned titles. Jeff Johns came from film writing, and even on top of all his DC work, was able to write episodes of Blade, which I still feel to this day got canceled long before it should have. Mark Miller has written on his website about writing treatments based on his creator-owned works, as well as pursuing other projects. I believe he was pitching a Green Lantern movie at one point. Warren Ellis has said, I believe, to be developing a new TV show with the BBC, and also, he didn't write this, but it's just announced, his book series is beginning. So Warren Ellis has 2 books on the way, so that's certainly interesting right there. Brian K. Vaughan has joined the writing staff of Lost. And the list goes on and on. Writers are writers. Sure, there may be some mediums you are better at than others, and even some where your heart truly is. But as a professional, you book all the work you can and perhaps even make the kind of living you can raise a family on. Actors are the same way. Sure, your heart may be in theater, but you still book those commercials or voiceovers when you can. Now, I know in the conversation you guys will be going into the pros and cons of the way some of the current and especially most visible Hollywood comic writers are affecting comics, and there is a lot to say on either side. But at the end of the day, it is important to remember that most writers end up working in a lot of different media, and most cannot be divided up into certain categories, comic writer, Hollywood writer, novelist, etc., very neatly. Remember, we tend to think of Peter David as a comic book writer, but he has also written enough for Hollywood that if he came to comics today, you would call him a Hollywood writer. And he has written enough Star Trek novels that he could also be seen as a novelist, Peter David. But at the end of the day, he's a professional writer, so that is why he does it all. Whew! And that's part 1 right there. So, God. Great statements there. And most particularly, the first part is specifically what's important here. Writers are writers. Whether you're coming from anywhere, you're a writer. So, you know, if these guys want to write comics, if they can do it, go ahead and do it. If they're comic writers who want to write Hollywood, go ahead and do it. If they want to write a novel, go ahead and do it. It makes perfect sense because, like he said, writers are writers. And I want to get your guys' take on that. So let's start it off with you, Raf.
Yeah, I think that that's a very good point. I've never, as someone who's trying to write comics, like every you know 20-something-year-old does before they give up their dreams, I think it's a good point that, you know, especially, I mean, how much could you, as a comic book writer, how much could you possibly make? Whereas if you went to Hollywood, sold a script, and, you know, if, you know, I think Michael Crichton makes like a million plus off of his script. So, I mean, what if you do that and do your comics? Not only would you be able to do something you love, you can also get paid. You also don't need to worry about getting paid for it. You know, you also have other avenues. So that's a very valid point.
Definitely. Brian, comments?
I think it goes back to what we were saying about, you know, them having more than one thing in the works because they're writers. So they have to do, you know, you can't just write 22 pages a month, you know. You gotta do more than that because that's what you love to do.
Hell yeah. Amen to that. And John?
Well, certainly I think writers are writers, and there's a core skill set that applies to TV writing, movie writing, play writing, you know, whatever. But I think there are also certain skills that are needed more for, say, writing comics versus a novel versus a movie, that sort of thing. And like you said, some are stronger at some formats than others. I totally agree with that. As for his comments, particularly with Peter David mentioning all the various places he works at and stuff, I mean, I certainly agree. If he were coming into comics today, he could easily be seen as either a Hollywood writer or more likely a novelist. But, you know, for my money, I peg him as a comic book writer because that's really where he got his first break and where he got established as a writer. But certainly, I mean, he's done tons of novels, tons of TV shows and movies and stuff, and shows just his versatility. I totally agree with that.
Definitely. And versatility is what matters in this business. So he certainly has all the ideal qualities that you want to find in a writer. On to his next statement. Those Hollywood writers are always late. Yes, Heimberg is late. Lindelof is late. Whedon is bi-monthly. Kevin Smith has books that are MIA. And I know that the stakes are raised in the case of Heimberg because DC chose to put him on a core monthly title. However, lest we play into a broad stereotype, I would like to add to the list those Hollywood writers the following names. Mark Guggenheim, Dwayne McDuffie, Christos Gage, David Goyer, Reginald Hudlin, Mark Verheiden, Howard Chaykin, Daniel Knopf, JMS, Bilson and DeMeo. Bilson and DeMeo. Now, some of these people may not be your favorite writers. I will admit, I was tempted to leave Bilson and DeMeo off. But my point is not about quality, it is about the notion that those Hollywood writers are always late. Love them or not, that list above are a group of professional writers who were, and in some cases, draw books some... Wait. Who... Yeah. Group of professional writers who write, and in some cases, draw books, some ongoing, some minis, that, to the memory, are as punctual as anyone's. And these are people who are still writing TV and movies and are probably developing and pitching things in Hollywood that we don't even know about. Hell, Reginald Hudlin manages to be the president of entertainment for BET and still get his books out on time. So I would say we should be careful of stereotypes. Just like I would hate to say something like Southern California pencilers are always late because of Jim Lee, let's not blame people like the above for Heimberg and Lindelof. And no one from the TV or film side has come to comics to make money. There is just not the kind of money in comics to be made. Not money like what these people are usually being paid. They are doing it because of the creative freedom, and I would guess because they love comics. I think it is important to remember that. And that, I think, is why people like the ones I have named above manage to still fit comic writing in even... to still fit comics writing in, even though the money is nothing compared to their other work. And another great point there. They would not be doing this if they didn't want to do it. And that's what's important to think here. You know, I mean, it's not like these Hollywood writers are just extending themselves. No, they want to write it because they obviously have at least some passion for it. And, John, I'm sure you agree with that.
Yeah, overall, I agree entirely with what he's saying. I'd quibble slightly on Dwayne McDuffie being included in that list because I feel he started in comics and then went to Hollywood. But that's not really the point that David's trying to make here. His point is that, you know, there are some people who, because of the writing grind in Hollywood, which on TV shows can be really grueling. I mean, particularly Straczynski, who wrote 90 episodes out of 100, actually I think 92 or something, out of 110 episodes of Babylon 5 in the span of 5 years. I mean, that's a lot of writing, and on, you know, very fixed deadlines. That instills a certain you get stuff out on time mentality. Obviously, in some cases that sticks, in other cases it doesn't. So, I mean, we don't want to just equate, gee, Hollywood going to be late. Unfortunately, I think that equation has already seeped into the minds of a lot of comic book fans, and, you know, in some cases unfairly so, although there's certainly enough, you know, evidence to support that kind of, you know, generalization.
Definitely, yeah. Raph, you agree with the statement?
Yeah, actually, if you think about it, if you look at Alan Heinberg, he's done three series that I've known of so far. Young Avengers, which was pretty much on time. JLA, Crisis of Conscience, which was pretty much on time, and it was co-written with someone else, and there's Wonder Woman, which is really late. So he's not the atypical late writer. I think also, yeah, I don't know how much exactly comic book writers make, but it's probably not as good as Hollywood. I mean, I think we have this whole conception of Hollywood as being this wonderful, magnificent place where you just do a little bit of work every day and you get paid a ridiculous amount of money. And, you know, maybe these people do get a ridiculous amount of money, but I don't think they have as much freedom as we think, because for writers, I'm pretty sure as soon as you submit that script, whether it's original or not, it's gone. It's out of your hands. The director takes it. The actors take it. They do what they will with it. They follow it. Fine. If they don't, then you can't do anything about it. So I could see from that perspective that, you know, they would love to do comics.
Oh, definitely, yeah. And actually, you know, you're right about the Hollywood thing, because a lot of the times that first script has nothing to do with the final script that comes out after all the rewrites that happen. All right, hold on here. My throat is dying on me. All right. Brent, what about you? You obviously, I mean, I'm sure you probably agree, like the rest of these folks out there, that Hollywood writers are always late. It's not exactly the truth for a lot of the people out there.
Well, yeah, I mean, we covered on it when we talked about these other writers, but I think the main reason that we brought this topic up is because of, you know, a couple egregiously late Hollywood writers. So, you know, a few do the crime and bring all the attention to it, and everybody else gets passed over because of a select few.
Yeah, and actually, I mean, that's the case in any real medium. You know, I mean, there are going to be certain writers that excel over others, and there's going to be certain writers because of their, you know, mistakes that you might think of because of, ahead of others. It might even sour you towards an entire group. And, I mean, that'll happen anywhere. You know, it's just the way it goes. So let's go with his next comment here. And it can work in the other direction. Many of the most talented theater actors in New York City are able to keep doing theater because they make their real money doing voiceovers and the occasional guest spot on Law & Order. Thanks to lucrative commercials and the outrageous amount of money TV will pay you to play a cranky judge for five lines, New York gets to have a talented community of actors able to do plays and still raise a family. The kind of money that mixing in some Hollywood or even video game work can bring to talented comic book writers can allow them to afford to still be full-time writers. Anyone who has tried to create comics or write anything on top of the day job can tell you what that means. Of course, I don't want to lose our best comic writers to TV, never to see them again. But in some cases, the boost from optioning a creator-owned movie a creator-owned work as a movie, or writing one episode of an animated series, as Ellis did for JLU, or helping to write a or helping to write a video game, will keep these writers able to be writing full-time, and will free them up to afford to keep making comics. I am hoping that this will be the case for Brian K. Vaughan, that with Lost paying the bills, he will still be able to pick and choose the comic projects he wants to do, finishing Ex Machina, of course, and then a miniseries or original graphic novel here and there when he can. And established writers from film and TV might be able to bring their following with them. We have all talked about ways in which more comics need to get in the hands of mainstream. Clearly, people are loving movies made from comics, but how to get them to read the comics? Well, in the case of Richard Kelly of Donnie Darko fame, he is doing the prequel to his next film in comics form. Some have already had the keep those Hollywood writers out of comics reaction, but what if Kelly, who has a cult following with Donnie Darko, manages to get some new or lapsed comics writers to get these books, and then they come back to that comic shop or bookstore section for more? People are hoping that Stephen King and Anita Blake will bring mainstream readers to comics, and there is every chance that someone like Kelly or other screenwriters might be able to do the same. Another great, great statement there, because there's a reason why you get these people from Hollywood. And yeah, they do have a following. They all do. I mean, that's how they make their living in Hollywood. They obviously become popular. So when they come over to the world of comics, I mean, come on, just think of how many Joss Whedon fans out there started picking up comics when immediately they heard he was going to start making comics. First with Frey and now with Astonishing. The same sort of thing happens with that in anybody who comes from Hollywood to comics. And again, the statement he makes about comics writers going to Hollywood, yeah, it's to pay the bills, and plus also it strengthens you as a writer because you're writing different things as opposed to just comics all the time. Brent, do you agree that it's necessary for these comic writers to actually make it into Hollywood? And also, obviously, his statement about the cult following that can happen with Hollywood writers coming to comics is certainly key to the demographic.
Well, I think that's the reason why Joss Whedon and Stephen King are getting involved with comics. You know, they want to bring over their following. Of course, Stephen King's not really writing the comic book, but he is, you know, the editor on it. So that's a little different. But, you know, they're using his property to bring over, you know, his readers, hopefully. Joss Whedon, the same thing. You know, they did the Buffy, the Frey comic, and now they're doing a Buffy comic, hopefully to bring over more brown coats or Whedon fans, whatever you guys call yourselves. So, yeah, I agree with that.
Brown coats.
I do think that, you know, I don't mind comic writers going to Hollywood because, you know, when Geoff Johns did the Blade series, he managed to keep his books out.
Yeah, no, definitely. John, your thoughts?
No, I got no problem with writers, you know, doing stuff for Hollywood and whatnot. Certainly optioning their stuff and leveraging whatever they can, particularly on creator-owned properties. I do get a little frustrated when there seem to be creators out there that are only using comics as a almost a marketing ploy to get a movie or to get into some of the format. Sometimes that works, sometimes that doesn't. I recently watched the Zoom movie, which was based on a three-issue series from a couple of years back, and I enjoyed the comic series. But it seemed like as soon as things started to move towards other venues for the property beyond comics, that creator's interest in comics just seemed to vanish. That's frustrating. I don't mind them and making movies out of the stuff, doing cartoons out of things, anything of that sort. But it seems to kind of self-serving establish a comic book fan base and then almost immediately abandon them in some cases.
Yeah.
With that as the exception, if Brian K. Vaughan wants to go work on Lost and that helps him pay the bills to give more of a comfort level to be spending his full time writing and then still do Ex Machina, awesome. I think that's great.
Well, I mean, all you got to do is think of somebody like Neil Gaiman, who, you know, he's like the perfect 2-tier guy, even 3-tier guy now. I mean, he's working on his Hollywood properties. You know, he's doing his comics, he's making his novels, and he's got fans from all three walks of life that will go ahead and pick up anything that he does these days. So it's certainly a draw when you have so many fans that you can actually rely on all the time.
Well, Peter David's a good example, too. You know, because of his work in the novels, the movies, the TV, all that stuff, he's able to be a writer full-time and has been for a while. And I think because of that, his writing has gotten that much better over the years.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, and again, experience for anybody will make you better, so... Raph, what about you? What's got your comments?
Yeah, I guess that's... I guess the overarching theme so far of David's comment has been, listen, these guys need to make their money and they need to let their creative steam off somehow. So I totally agree with his perspective. I mean, if I were to ever finally break into comics, I don't think I would ever... I mean, I would love to do comics my entire life, but I don't know if that would be able to keep me going. You know, I mean, you know, it's really great to be a full-time writer, but... You know, is that going to be viable for you, especially if you have a family? You know, is it, you make, let's say, I don't know, $2,000 off of one comic a month. Is that enough to take care of everything? So, yeah, I mean, going to Hollywood maybe isn't that such a bad thing for you, because you get to do your comics work and you get to do a little bit of writing. And that, like, you know, you're using your skills to pay the bills, basically, and you don't have to do anything else, which is, I guess, the ideal for a writer and for anybody, really, who works something that they love.
And let's face it, the world revolves around money, so you're not going to be able to stop that.
Yeah.
Yeah. We got one last thing to cover here. There are some things Hollywood can teach comics. You all know how I feel about 52. Dan DiDio, who came from television himself before he went to comics, has set 52 up like a television show. It is the first comic I can think of with a writer's room. And it's something television does. It spends more money on writers to create a diverse, collaborative team of them brainstorming the story and then breaking it into parts and each scripting different scenes. The whole standalone-ish series of 52 feels like an extra long season. We get the issues or episodes weekly. Long story arcs are planned in advance and later paid off. For the $2.50 each week, this Hollywood thinking applied to this kind of event has worked very, very well. All I would love the writer's room, and I would love the writer's room standard in extra investment in talent to be the new bar for big events. Hell, I think Civil War could have used three more writers. Sorry, I couldn't resist. I'm serious, though, that I would love to see that element of 52's success applied towards future big-ticket events from both companies. All right, that is more than enough for me to chew on. Looking forward to the episode, David D. So his final comment there, obviously, that comics have taken a certain thing from Hollywood, and that is the writer's room. Do you want to see more comics with a writer's room style to it? Because obviously 52 has been working damn good so far. And I guess we'll start this off with Raph.
It works and it doesn't work for me because... it works with 52 because you have such a wide variety of casts that you can have Rucka doing Renee in Question, you can have Morrison doing the space story, and you know they're separate but they're still together. What do you really think? Let's say you put those four on okay, never mind. They've all written Superman. They write Superman very well. But let's just say you put four writers on Superman. What if one of them doesn't really like Superman? What if them, you know, can't really think of a good Superman story? It's all about, you have to play up the strengths of the writer, and then you have to play up the strengths of the story. So you have to find that right. I think 52 has been it's been about the great chemistry and the mix between the four writers. And if you can reproduce that, great. But if you can't do it, then you're in trouble.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you shouldn't even try to do a writer's room if you don't have writers that want to work together. That's number one. And these guys obviously want to write together with 52. So you're going to have to repeat that process with a new comic that's going to use the same style, obviously. John, your comments?
Oh, I think it's great. I think there's a lot from television mindset that comics can benefit from. Certainly, I think the writer's room has worked out well for 52. We've seen similar kinds of ideas, not so much with the writer room per se, but getting people under the same roof and getting a better sense of collaboration. Back at CrossGen in particular. You know, I think that potentially in coming years we may see this kind of television production model getting extended to areas beyond just writing. I could see where potentially it could go even towards the art and the production of the actual pages for comics. It's getting to where one of the biggest limiting factors in cost of comics and certainly the speed at which they can be produced is just how long it takes to hand draw, the 20 or 22 pages of story.
Yeah.
And I think there are ways that those hurdles can be gotten around and leveraged. Again, looking towards Hollywood and movies as a place to steal ideas and techniques from.
Well, not only that, but also think of just how much time people save by using computers these days.
Oh, yeah. I mean, computers in particular, I think we're going to hit a point potentially in the next 5 to 10 years, maybe sooner, maybe later, where hand-drawing comics may not be the only, common method being used. We may start seeing more 3D programs being used to do like a cel-shaded or tune-rendered style art where it still looks like traditional comics, because I don't really think the average reader is ready for more photorealistic art. But we then allow a team of computer artists to rapidly put together an entire issue, conceivably in a fraction of the time it would take one artist to draw the entire thing. If you had that kind of production facility existing already, things like the delays on the Civil War may not have happened.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of very interesting things. If it gets to where everything's done in a 3D realm, you've essentially got the concept of casting your characters much like you do in a TV show, having sets and locations scouted out and props built, again, much like a television show. There's a lot of very exciting things that can happen in this area. I think we're only starting to scratch the surface on that.
Well, just as long as they don't visit the Greg Land School of Swiping, then I'm happy. Everything is A-okay as long as that happens.
If it's on the 3D models and stuff, you don't have to swipe from a magazine. Imagine if you put together a 3D model of Batman, Alfred, and the Batcave. Suddenly, you've got the ability to do every Batcave scene, and that's a frequent thing that shows up in the Batman books. Fairly quickly and easily.
Oh boy.
You can leverage stuff instead of starting with a blank page and nothing to bring to it other than, a penciler looking at a deadline.
Yeah, but yet again, you kind of just explain what Greg Land does sometimes, using his own artwork to help him out.
Well, to me, this is just like Disney leveraging computer animation in their films. Do I want to see everything look like Toy Story or The Incredibles? No.
Yeah.
But we should be using technology to benefit us as much as we can. As, sales are going down on comics, it's getting to where you've got to leverage the cost of producing those 20 or 22 pages of art and story against, 50,000 units versus, quarter of a million. There's going to come a point where cost effectiveness is going to become a much bigger issue.
Sure. Yeah, definitely.
Well, two things on the art thing, actually. Did you guys see the Daily Classified run with Warren Ellis where the covers were 3D?
Yeah.
What do you guys think of that?
No. Looks like Greg Horn.
Yeah.
I don't think photorealistic art works for comics. It tends to come across as still and lifeless, and just like a slideshow or a photograph that has no soul or whatever. Which is why I think if you're going to do computer art for comic books, at this point, you're better off doing it to where it's got cel shading or a tune render kind of thing, to where it looks like traditional comic book art that's got the inked lines and that sort of thing.
Okay, that leads to my second one. What about the Extremis arc from Iron Man? That was computer art, I think.
Yeah, but it also took forever.
Oh,
which
yeah,
one
that's
was this again?
Extremis, the first arc for Invincible Iron Man with Warren Ellis and Eddie Granoff.
Uh-huh.
The one that was delayed, I thought that the art was terrific. It's just that it took forever to come out. So I think we're making strides towards computer art becoming more of a thing in the
comics. Was that done with computer art, or was that just more of a painted kind of a style?
I think it was a little... I think it may have been...
I think it was computer painting.
Yeah, it was computer painted. I don't think it was the pencils all... Like, I don't think it was done, like, penciled on the computer.
But by computer painted, is this something where they're basically taking a pen tablet and doing the painting on the computer versus on physical paper or something? Or are they actually doing the 3D models and that sort of thing?
I think it's like Alex Ross doing it on a computer.
Because yeah, something like that.
I can only think of about a handful of examples where they've actually done 3D art and used it in the comics. Marvel, I think, has done it a time or two with a Spider-Man miniseries from a few years back. I get the name wrong on this one. I think it was Negative Exposure. It might have been maybe Funeral for a Friend, one of the two.
The War Machine Max series also.
I was going to say the War Machine Max series was the other one. And again, in the War Machine Max series, they, again, tried not to make it look like it was a plastic 3D photorealistic kind of a thing. There have been some indie comics that were done straight out of a couple of popular 3D tools, which had varying levels of success. Symbiotes was one managed to get 4 issues out of 8 done. It was pretty good, but it just seemed to have died after that.
Yeah, well, I guess it's one of those things that can work, but it's got to be done right.
It hasn't developed
right,
its market.
Think long-term for Marvel and DC. If you start investing a little at a time and build up your library of assets and stuff to where you've got every member of the Justice League, Teen Titans, this, that, and the other, you know, we may never get there. We might. I don't know. It would be interesting to watch that.
Definitely, yeah. Brett, let's just get some final comments on you on what David said previously about the writer's room and how that could probably be effective for comics, whether or not you want to see another writer's room in comics, and I guess also working with the 3D stuff as well, if you want to touch on that anymore.
Well, I think I would like to see more writer's room, I guess, if the story merits it. I think certainly 52 merits it. Maybe something like Civil War could merit a writer's room. I would like to see more co-writers on things, not a plotter versus a scripter co-writing sort of situation that we have now, but, you know, really a collaborative comic book, like where me and Raph sit down next to each other and write it together. You know, a couple of these guys have offices together. Maybe they could co-write a comic book. You know, Heinberg and Johns, I think they share an office. They could write a book together easily,
yeah.
You know? I'll see you here at 8. Okay. And then it'll be out on time because Johns will kick him in the ass.
And that's the thing. He actually will physically kick you in the ass.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Versus the 3D art, I don't think I'd like to see a Toy Story comic book created by Toy Story, you know, 3D figures. I mean, it would work, but when you look at the still shots versus the motion of the movies, you don't have that same feeling of life. There's a reason that comic books have, like, you know, the cross-hatching and the action lines and stuff like that. It's to show motion and make it fluid and dynamic and in a way that I don't think 3D art can do right now, unless you figure out a way to, like, you know, blur the thing instead of action lines, which they're doing sometimes, but I don't know. I like the painted stuff. I think that's cool. Like, Adi Granoff does great covers, but keep him off a monthly book because he just cannot do it.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. You got to actually be able to work on a monthly schedule to be on a monthly book.
And well, I mean, and that's why Alex Ross is doing, you know, Justice. He's having some guy do the pencils.
Mm-hmm.
But even there, looking at the Justice book, I can't tell if it's Doug Braithwaite I'm looking at or Alex Ross.
Yeah.
You know, because the Superman there looks like the Superman from Kingdom Come, when Kingdom Come was all Alex Ross. So, I don't know how much Braithwaite is doing or anything like that. But
Braithwaite is actually drawing in an Alex Ross style, because they previously collaborated, so each other's works very well.
I read Paradise X and Universe X, but it was still different than this.
Mm.
Well, I think Alex told him, it's my book, draw my style. Maybe, you know... Because it was Alex's pitch to DC for Justice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be surprised if they're actually working a little more closely on that to ensure that it's actually in an Alex Ross style, since it is an Alex Ross book officially.
Well, it really does look like, you know, his stuff. I mean...
Oh, yeah.
You remember that Wizard cover where he painted over Jim Lee?
Mm-hmm.
You could still tell it was like Jim Lee.
Yeah.
But with Alex Ross over it. Here, in that case, I can't tell whether it's, you know, what it is. So, but he's doing a real good job on that, whatever he's doing.
Definitely, yeah. We actually have one more forum post here from some guy named Stephen Hawking. I have no idea what's going on here, but he says, and I quote,
I don't know why you guys make fun of me, but it's not funny. Please stop. Love your podcast.
And that's by Stephen Hawking. Just to let you guys know. So I thank you very much, Stephen, for actually tuning in and listening to the show. I am very frightened now and afraid that he's going to sue me. So
his slurs are coming after us.
Oh, God. Run for your lives. Run for your lives. And surprisingly enough, Stephen is not going to be at New York Comic Con is bigger, better, and has double the space with more gaming and anime for 2007. Come to the Jacob Javits Center February 23rd to 25th and experience the biggest pop culture event in New York City, featuring comics, anime, manga, graphic novels, video games, trading card games, RPG, MMOs, toys, movies, TV, celebrity, and more. Guest of honors include Stan Lee, Jeff Smith, J. Michael Straczynski, George Perez, Stephen Colbert, and many more to be announced. For a complete list of guests as well as show information, please visit nycomiccon.com. Buy your tickets online now to ensure your spot for the 2007 show. Tickets are available now at a discounted rate for advanced purchases at nycomiccon.com. You can also book your travel arrangements online now on the travel page of the website. Don't miss out on a 2007 New York Comic Con. Visit our website to get all the information you need, or Stephen Colbert will punch you in the face.
Love Stephen Colbert. He's hilarious.
Yes, he is. And I
Tech Jansen, right?
Dude, I cannot wait for the Tech Jansen comic. It's going to be awesome. I think it's Oni Press is doing that, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that,
see, Marvel missed the boat on that one. Yeah, Joe Quesada was on that show.
Yeah. But at the same time, I would love to get an interview with Stephen. So hopefully he'll be willing to do that. That'd be awesome. But before we wrap things up here on this particular episode and what an episode it was, let's get some final information on what's upcoming from these boys. And I'll guess, John, what is upcoming on your comic book page podcast that you'd like to plug other than the Sean and Jim that you already plugged?
Well, that implies I have the content coming down the pipe. And I try to go for content-free podcasts as much as possible. I find that lowers expectations and really cuts down on the people demanding more episodes. Really, I got nothing.
Where's your next episode?
It depends how quickly I get the one edited with Sean and Jim. Beyond that, I've had a couple other things kind of taking up my time these days.
Okay.
I got to get ready for the segments I do over on Comic Geek Speak and the Collective Comics Library Trade Secrets podcast. We're going to be going over the December 2006 numbers pretty soon. And then I think Chris and I are going to try to put something together for a 2006 kind of year in review for the sales.
Oh, cool. That should be pretty cool. Any idea when your next CGS actual segment's going to take place? Or?
I believe we're going to record it on Monday, which means I got a lot of work to do between now and then. And I don't know when it can get released. Probably sometime that week. So soon.
Cool. Awesome. And obviously you can find him over at comicgeekspeed.com and comicbookpage.com and Collected Comics Library. What's Collected Comics Library's website? That would be collectedcomicslibrary.blogspot.com. So you can find that stuff over there. Brent, any idea what your BK Bullets is going to be after your three-week-old one airs?
No.
He's going to have an in-depth review of All-Star Batman and Robin.
Well, usually I wait for one to be released and then plan the next one, so...
Oh, but it's been 3 weeks. I thought perhaps, you know, you decided that I'm going to have one in the pipeline already, but okay, fine.
Well, fine. You know, they're doing this thing where they're going over every DC title in the DC universe.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, doing, like, catch-ups.
Yeah.
You know, when they did one issue before.
Mm-hmm.
But now that they're redoing it, I'm kind of like left in a boat. So the one that you're going to get this week is something that just popped up just because there were two great things. So that's Batman Year 100 and the Smallville Justice episode. But unless something strikes me, it's going to be something really weird.
Batman Year 100. Actually looking forward to that. That was a great series.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I'm really looking forward to the next issue of next episode of Raging Bullets. I have to listen to it. It's something about, I think, Thanksgiving. So I'm a little behind.
Wow.
I know. Oh. I have at least 26 hours of that podcast to listen to, maybe 48 by now. It's been a few days.
You have four episodes to listen to?
No, you're giving them a little too much credit. 3.5.
Yes.
Oh, God. They announced a new contest, and they're like, the winner of this contest is going to get a segment on the show. Review a book with us. And I'm just like, oh, you're kidding me. It's like, haven't me and Raph earned it yet?
What do you got to do? Oh, my. Yeah, I know, right? Jeez.
Like, yeah. You have to send in more stuff for the website.
Oh, you
like,
gotta do
more bullet points, a comic strip or something.
So, wait, I do a weekly com. Does that mean I get, like, an entry for each one, you know?
Well, see, if you already listened to 41 Part 1, you'd already know this.
Yeah, no, I listened to it.
They specifically addressed you. They said everything.
31 or something. Give me a break.
I've actually been listening to John Mayo's podcast, so I haven't had a chance to listen to the latest episode of Bridging Bullets.
Well, they said everything submitted in 2007 would count, so.
Oh, okay.
All right, you know, good. All of your two columns so far count.
I'm going daily now. The hell with this.
Yeah,
I want to be on.
Me too.
Yeah. And Raph, do we expect the Geeks Unite before the end of the millennium? Or?
Yeah, I hope to be better than Jim Lee, Alan Heinberg, and Kevin Smith, at least in that aspect. I should have at least one episode out before New York Comic Con. I'm probably going to record at New York Comic Con.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so the first one's going to be about Civil War number 6, the DC teaser poster thing that they released, and this review copy of Super Frats I received, and possibly some other geek stuff. I'm not sure yet.
Awesome. Well, dude, bring your mic splitter and excuse me, bring your mic. I'll bring my splitter, and we'll have to do a Comic Timing episode while we're there.
Awesome.
Yeah, definitely. And Brent, we'll think of you.
Yes.
Thanks.
Yeah. Definitely.
And John, you too. Although I'll probably see you again eventually. So yeah,
CGS probably. 300.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah, but no,
which
definitely.
Is gonna be, what,
next and
week at this rate, geez.
Oh man, alive! Well, no, episode 300 will be out next Tuesday. So
maybe tomorrow even.
Something like that, yeah. And Raph, once again, the website for Geeks Unite:
www.freewebs.com/comicgeeksunite.
Excellent. Awesome. So there you go with that, and let's wrap this baby up here. Since, you know, it's only been about 3 hours. The email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out those forums over at cgspodcast.com/forum, which are graciously hosted by the Comic Geeks Beat guys. Please vote for us on Podcast Alley. The links are in the show notes, and there is a list of Podcast Alley podcast you could vote for on the Comic Timing forums. And please dig Comic Timing. There's also a thread for that on the Comic Timing forums. We are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcast.com. Please send us your iTunes reviews on iTunes. That would be graciously appreciated. And I believe that's everything, unless I'm forgetting something. And if I am, I'm probably not going to say it. Damn late already, and I want to go to bed. So, Brent, John, Raph, thanks for joining me here, and thank God we finally got this one recorded.
You did press record, right?
Oh, shit!
Oh.
No, it's recorded. Don't worry.
Stone!
Bruce Jones.
Oh, God.
Oh, man. Oh.
Ah, Raph, go eat. Go cook some more meat.
Yeah,
some
not noodles. A boss.
Yeah, and as always, there's always time for comics.
And that wraps up this syndicated episode of the Comic Book Page Podcast. My name is John Mayo, and I've been your host. If you have any questions or comments, my email address is podcast@comicbookpage.com. Thanks for listening.